Hey, folks, can you believe it? Summer is almost officially over. What is it, like in a week or two? That's not funny.
It's sort of like a sad laugh.
I know, that is a, it's good. Yeah. But if your summer was anything like mine, you're going to need to recenter a little bit this fall. Maybe you're looking to do more self-care, calm yourself. Have a little help relaxing. Maybe you have some aches from traveling or just, I don't know, dealing with
life,
your life, your children. Maybe you need a little help getting your sleep schedule back on track. Well, if these sound like good fall goals to you, our buddies at SunsetLakeSabade.com are here to help. Now through September 14th, you can save 30% on all Sunset Lake Sabade tinctures when you use the coupon code FALLTINCTURE. That includes their everyday formulas, their sleep tinctures, even their pet tinctures. I've been using the Goodnight Oil tincture for, I don't know, since they came out with it, maybe 2 years or something. It is incredibly helpful to me to sleep. I have friends who use their tinctures for their doggies, the Sabade tinctures themselves are nice when you want to relax at night. You don't want to just, get messed up, but you want to just chill. And they have them in multiple different strengths and flavors. Sale ends September 14th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern, so don't wait. Stock up on your favorite tinctures with this deep discount sale. Now's the time to do it. Head over to SunsetLakeSabade.com. Use the code FALLTINCTURE, all one word, for 30% off of all Sabade tinctures. And, of course, you can always use our code LEFTISBEST to save 20% on all the rest of their sun-grown Vermont products. See their site for terms and conditions, and we'll put a link in the podcast and YouTube description. Now time for the show.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Tuesday, September 9th, 2025. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, David Dayan, executive editor of the American Prospect magazine, host of the Prospect's weekly roundup, and co-host of the podcast Organized Money, will be on to talk about the Democratic leadership's capitulation plans, Google's monopoly get out of jail free card, well, not quite jail, and the FTC's reversal on non-compete clauses. Also on the program today, Trump can't shake Epstein revelations as Democrats seem to have secured the votes needed for a discharge petition on legislation that would release all the Epstein files. U.S. job growth revised down for 2024. Israel bombs Qatar in an attempt to kill the Hamas negotiations team.
I've heard that before.
Also,
I mean, not Qatar, but yeah.
Indeed. Also demands 1 million people leave Gaza City as a prelude to bombing it. And attacks a Gaza-bound flotilla boat. Meanwhile, Supreme Court allows Trump to fire Federal Trade Commission member, at least temporarily, despite all precedent. Zoran Mamdani with a huge lead in New York City in the new poll. Trump regime halts an IRS crackdown on millionaires and corporations' tax shelters. Going to cost us about $100 billion over 10 years. Lachlan Murdoch buys out his siblings to ensure that Fox News stays right-wing fascist propaganda. Supreme Court allows ICE to racially profile as it does roving sweeps. And in the communist state of New Mexico, they are now going to be offering universal free childcare.
It's the business community thinking.
What the heck?
Don't piss down my...
Well, that's weird. All this and more on today's Majority Report. That's what I wanted to do, but my soundboard has a weird tint to it. So I got confused. It is...
Newsday Tuesday. I almost forgot what it was.
Yep, there you go. I'm as exhausted from all the arguing about football with Brian. Before. Things got very heated in here before, and I was...
It wasn't heated. It was
just
loud.
It was super heated.
Yeah, we were just distracting Sam.
It was super, super heated. And the anger, the seething anger over this stuff.
Yeah, I'm filing an HR complaint at some point. Yeah, just because of all of that
sadly,
anger.
Brian is the one who you have to go through to
that's
file.
True.
So that's the problem.
I came in.
I'm self-hating enough for that to go well for her.
Brian's on suspension. Self-suspension.
Interesting. Self-paid suspension.
Exactly. Yeah.
How will I recover?
Yesterday, the Democrats on the House Oversight Committee, again, they don't run the committee, but they have access to documents that come in, and apparently lawyers for some of Jeffrey Epstein victims who had gotten some material in discovery in court cases in the past provided the Oversight Committee with documents, including the birthday book that Jeffrey Epstein got on his 50th birthday. Presumably, I don't know, Ghislaine Maxwell may have like solicited from all his buddies funny cards.
Yeah. I mean, they basically what was here, the maybe we can pull it up really briefly, Sam, just because like this is the letter that the Trump administration and Trump himself is saying he never wrote and doesn't exist.
If I remember correctly, J.D. Vance says, do you know anything about Donald Trump? This is absolutely a total fabrication. If they had the letter, they would publicize it. Well, apparently it was given to the House Oversight Committee and it was released in a Google Drive that basically everybody has access to. Here is the card. It is, as you can see, in the shape of a naked woman.
I mean, remember the renderings after, like, people were describing it, or the Wall Street Journal described it before publishing it, and so people were kind of imagining what it would look like. Better art than this. This is maybe why Trump stuck to just drawing buildings, because, like, this woman's form is
like
not very well drawn.
I like my women without arms.
Or also with, well, I guess it makes a little bit more sense because those breasts are pretty tiny if this is about little girls. Not to make it too dark, but that's what we're discussing here.
Voiceover. Unclear why it's a voiceover, but maybe it's like a fake ad. It's some type of script. Voiceover. There must be more to life than having everything, Donald. Oh, okay. There must be more to life that the voiceover says there must be more to life than having everything. And then Donald says, yes, there is, but I won't tell you what it is. Jeffrey, nor will I, since I also know what it is. Donald, we have certain things in common, Jeffrey. Jeffrey, yes, we do come to think of it. Donald, what is it? Enigmas never age.
Yeah, that's the great line. Enigmas never age. Have you noticed that?
Jeffrey says, as a matter of fact, it was clear to me the last time I saw you. Donald, A pal is a wonderful thing. Happy birthday.
And may every day be another wonderful secret.
Yeah.
Donald Trump.
Also, apparently Enigma is an anagram for gamines, which is little girls. And I'm not trying... But, Matt, they're all talking in weird code here.
I think the Enigma thing is more likely him as an informant.
Yes.
Fair enough.
I agree with that.
But there was this, just really quickly, this tweet from the guy for Jewish Currents, Jesse Brenneman, who said, QAnon follower, see here, see what Pelosi did, see how she blinked twice and turned left. That's a code among pedophiles alluded to in the latest Q drop. Now, if we examine this napkin and then Trump, you could say Jeffrey Epstein and I had the sexual secret, one that never ages, wink, which is kind of how this is playing out.
So this drops yesterday. Trump continues to deny. And
Trump's son said he never draws, which is just obvious lie.
Obvious lie. Also, why would he have to have necessarily drawn it himself? Yeah. I mean, he signed the card. Like, you know, it's the idea that, like,
oh, yeah, that's not his signature.
He says, oh, yeah, well, right, of course. It's somebody who has, for whatever, forged a signature to Jeffrey Epstein on his birthday 20 years ago.
In Sharpie, which Trump always uses.
Didn't out it in 2016.
Exactly. It is this is the long con. But the idea that, like, he didn't draw it, okay, draw me a woman with breasts, and then I'll sign it right in the vagina. That's what that takes. Oh, yeah, that's what that is.
You didn't realize that?
That's the whole joke there.
It's pubic hair.
And now, I have to say, on my 50th birthday, I didn't get anything like this. I mean, even junior high stuff, like, honestly, it's literally junior high stuff. Nevertheless, here is Representative David Mint. He is on the Oversight Committee, a Democrat on that committee. Again, in about a month, the Democrats plus four Republicans are going to have the votes to force a discharge petition and essentially get legislation on the floor that would force all of the Epstein files to be released. The Democrats are still waiting for two Democrats to replace members who have passed away, including Connolly, who was the former most senior member of the Democrats on the House Oversight Committee. And, you know, many people are suggesting that we wouldn't even have this information if Connolly was still alive.
Yeah, I mean, he was, rest in peace, but he was on death's door and he won that position over AOC.
Well, he was very peppy.
It was his turn.
Guy. He was a peppy guy.
And he was
guy.
Battle-hardened.
Yes. But here is Dave Mint with John Berman on CNN. John Berman on CNN, I guess maybe they don't want to have to pay any type of fees. Let's put it this way. They're treading lightly, although, you know, one of the ways that you can tread lightly and also report on the news is to have somebody else on delivering the message.
Again, I do want to say we have no reason to think that he was in any way involved with that check itself. Also, no reason to think he's detected any wrongdoing involving Jeffrey Epstein. You noted you're a prosecutor.
Well, pause it. Now, okay, CNN says they have no reason, and Dave Mint will answer this, but I just want to be clear what Berman's saying. We have no reason to believe that Donald Trump was involved in any wrongdoing with Jeffrey Epstein. There's no definitive proof, and there's no nothing explicit that would suggest. But I think Dave Mint is about to explain why we might have some reasons to think something's up. Because remember, the White House, like, virulently lobbied against the release of these files and the signing of this discharge petition. This could all go away tomorrow if the White House wanted it to. But for some reason, either they want to keep it in play, which is absurd.
Are you still talking about Jeffrey Epstein?
Or they really don't want something to come out. But here's David.
Again, I do want to say we have no reason to think that he was in any way involved with that check itself. Also, no reason to think he's detected any wrongdoing involving Jeffrey Epstein. You noted you're a prosecutor, you're a lawyer here. There's this defamation.
I would say we have lots of reasons to think he was involved in wrongdoing. I mean, at this point, there's a lot of smoke. There may be some fire, but I would just push back and say I think there's a lot of reason to think Donald Trump was involved.
Involved with what? I'm sorry, what exactly, what proof do you have that he was involved with wrongdoing in regards to Jeffrey Epstein? And if that's the case, why have there been no prosecutions over 20 years here? Because there haven't really been any allegations that he was involved with wrongdoing.
There are a lot of connections where Donald Trump was named, right? We had a 14-year-old claiming that she was raped by him, then withdrew that claim after she was apparently threatened. His name appears a lot, and again, we at this point, our job is to find justice for these survivors, and that means that we need to continue.
All right, pause it for 1 second. Let's just remind people about that allegation, because this was coming up in like 2016, and then it went away.
Mm-hmm.
And then it came back up again in 2019 as Ronan Farrow's book, Catch and Kill. Came out, and he related this story. Farrow in the book claims that AMI CEO David Pecker was the one from the National Enquirer who also was implicated in the whole Stormy Daniels thing, where he was going to go out and Cohen, Trump's lawyer, was going to pay to essentially gave money to Pecker to give money, and the idea being like, we go and we pay someone who's accusing Trump for an exclusive rights to the story, we buy the exclusive rights to the story, and then we just don't publish it as a favor for Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm. Catch and kill.
Farrow in the book claims that Pecker was in close contact with Trump when the rape allegations were made public in a 2016 lawsuit.
And this is a rape of a teenager, an alleged rape of a teenager in 1994. Now, Trump met Epstein in the late 80s and early 90s. So we don't know if this rape allegation is connected to Epstein, but it would very much fit the timeline of their friendship and relationship.
The lawsuit filed against Trump in the lead up to 2016 claimed that Trump raped a woman when she was 13 in 1994. Trump's lawyer said that was categorically untrue. The anonymous plaintiff, identified as Katie Johnson in an initial legal filing that was dismissed in California, and Jane Doe in two subsequent legal filings in New York, said that she was raped by Trump during a party hosted by the now deceased pedophile Jeffrey Epstein at his New York City apartment. In the third and final lawsuit, Doe alleged she had numerous sexual encounters with Trump and Epstein at the latter's parties and said she was also raped by Epstein, as BuzzFeed News reported at the time. Trump and Epstein knew that I was 13 years old, Jane Doe wrote in an affidavit. Now, Farrow alleges that after the suit was filed in 2016, Inquirer editor Howard and Trump lawyer Cohen were in contact frequently, and apparently this plaintiff, the accuser, there was like a break-in at the lawyer's house, and then they basically just went away at one point. Howard, now chief content officer at AMI, tried to use his influence to convince Lisa Bloom, a power attorney who agreed to represent Jane Doe, to drop her client. This is all based on Farrow's reporting. Farrow's reporting, historically, has been very solid.
Yeah.
And
Harvey
Weinstein. There's somebody
case.
In jail on multiple counts because of it. In November of 2016, just days before the presidential election, Bloom suddenly announced that a press conference with Jane Doe had been canceled, saying Doe had become frightened after receiving death threats. 2 days later, Doe's lead attorney, Thomas Meagher, filed to dismiss the case. Jane Doe has not been heard from since. Bloom added, after we received numerous death threats and my law firm's website and emails were hacked, she did not want to go forward. Bloom said she did not enter any agreements with AMA on Doe's behalf. I represented Ms. Doe for free, and there was never any discussion of money or settlement, as I strongly believed her allegations should be made public, given that Trump was running for president at the time. So that's what David Mint is talking about. Again, that's all, it's just an accusation. It's all circumstantial.
Just like that photo of them together, just like that letter.
You don't look good.
Well, that's it. The photo is explicit. The letter is explicit. I mean, there's obviously a relationship there. It's quite possible that a woman who is by 2016, she would have been 33 or 34, had decided to just, for whatever reason, interject herself into this situation with Donald Trump. It's quite possible that Bloom, who was representing her for free, was just doing it on a lark and has no ability to assess the validity of her client. It's also possible that she just randomly decided not to pursue this, just had a complete change of heart based upon nothing, and that she didn't receive death threats. But that's a lot of stuff that had to have happened in that year that, you know, running up to Donald Trump being president. I mean, it's sort of strange.
Well, that was when he was deep undercover as an informant. So he had to do the rape.
I bet those threats were coming from both sides during that election, too.
You mean in terms of like...
The threats towards her, because if you look into that, you look into Epstein, you look into Bill.
It was mutual disarmament.
It's possible. It's possible. It's not like there wasn't Epstein stuff floating around, though. And they're not mutually... They're not necessarily tied in with each other. But here's... let's let David Mint continue.
Trump was named, right? We had a 14-year-old claiming that she was raped by him. Then withdrew that claim after she was apparently threatened. His name appears a lot. And again, we at this point, our job is to find justice for these survivors, and that means that we need to continue digging, knowing that there is a cover-up taking place right now. And I didn't say that we have proof. At this point, we have like a lot of smoke. But Donald Trump's name is clearly mentioned multiple times. We've seen him lie over and over about things that we now know to be true. So again, I think that we, as the Oversight Committee, we owe an obligation to the girls, the American people out there, to keep digging and find out the truth, whoever's involved.
Again, Donald Trump has not been named in any connection or charged with any wrongdoing there. Ghislaine Maxwell, take this for
pause
what
it for
is,
a second.
But Ghislaine.
What do you mean? We just heard reports that he had been accused of rape. Now, he hasn't been named because we don't know that because we can't see the documents because Donald Trump won't release the documents. So
it's
you can't say that he's been named and you can't say that he hasn't been named. And you could argue like, well, you can't prove a negative, but there is somebody who could prove the negative and his name is Donald Trump.
Yep.
And he's refusing to release the information that would prove that he's not in there. Now, you could say, well, we don't know that Sam Cedar's name isn't in there, but I don't have control over keeping that document being released. I'm in favor. Release it. But you don't know that anybody's name is in there, but there is literally one person who is preventing these documents from being released, and his name is Donald Trump.
Yeah, well, there could be other reasons, too. I mean, there could be other, infrastructure, I would say, behind the scenes that doesn't want it released because it has, like, sensitive classified information in it, too. That's another speculation, but we don't know. It's just, like, the over-the-top Berman going back and back to this. It's one thing to say he's not been formally charged with wrongdoing. It's another thing to say that, like, he's basically not been implicated in any way and make that assertion after Min lays that out. It's ridiculous, and it's indicative of how Donald Trump is bullying the media and using the government to try to extract all of this money from these media companies. Like, he should look at what just happened with the release of that letter. Trump sued the Wall Street Journal. What was down in Florida? Was he filed that lawsuit for $10 million claiming that they were making up that letter? And now that letter is public, and we know, of course, he wasn't making it up. Shouldn't the other media organizations say, like, hey, There's nothing here at this point. They have emptied the clip on all of the lying. This is going to catch up at some point. But no, we have to do this dance again? It's absurd.
So you're saying you don't trust Ghislaine Maxwell?
I'm not. I don't trust Ghislaine Maxwell, who has been found guilty, I believe, of lying under oath. But I want to hear the rest.
Has not been named in any connection or charged with any wrongdoing there. Ghislaine Maxwell, take this for what it is. But Ghislaine Maxwell said, you know, she never saw Donald Trump or anyone, for that matter, engaged in any wrongdoing connected to Jeffrey Epstein. Dave, Congressman from California.
I will just point out that Ghislaine Maxwell was indicted for perjury after she made that statement that you mentioned, transferred to minimum security prison in Texas. So, again.
Look, Speaker Johnson sat right here and told me he doesn't really believe anything Ghislaine Maxwell says. I was merely stating what was in that transcript. But there are plenty of people on both sides of the aisle who don't put much weight in it. Congressman Dave Mint.
Oh, okay. Well, it's good that you brought that up after you had said, that seems like a pretty important qualifier.
A notorious liar trying to get something from Trump said something favorable to Trump. Okay, thanks, John.
But he, like, if it wasn't, I mean, Min did a good job on this, not letting him get away with this. Also worth reminding people that the DOJ official who went to interview Ghislaine Maxwell when she said these things 11 months ago was Donald Trump's defense attorney.
Yep.
That's quite a coincidence.
Wasn't he involved in the shakedown of Eric Adams, too? Like, not
that was, I think, Bovey. But although he could have been in the room. But nevertheless, I mean, it seems like that's also something that any time you ever cover this on cable news should be mentioned. Ghislaine Maxwell told Donald Trump's former defense attorney, now DOJ representative, that Donald Trump didn't do anything wrong. Convicted liar,
yes.
Ghislaine Maxwell told Donald Trump's defense attorney, now DOJ representative, that Donald Trump didn't do anything.
And it's not even the biggest part of that is that she has an incentive to do that because she wants a pardon. Like, how do you not say that about what Ghislaine Maxwell said as a journalist and make the obvious claim that she's, one, been shown to be a liar in court, and two, that she has an incentive to suck up to the president because she wants out of prison? And they've already rewarded her for her, complicity in this cover-up. They sent her to a nicer facility.
Bureau of Prison regulation.
And I'm not somebody that thinks, like, oh, a prison should be as horrible. I think all these prisons should be, like, places of rehabilitation, regardless of the crimes that have been committed. But it shows that there has been an exchange made. And if you're a journalist on television talking about this case, the idea that you're acting basically as a lawyer for CNN, functionally, and their parent company on television, instead of doing real journalism, is one of the more darkly depressing elements of, like, the state of our industry at this moment.
When you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them by the pussy.
Trump was found liable of sexual abuse in court. That's also some circumstantial evidence about this rape allegation.
In a moment, we're going to be talking to David Dayan. He is the executive editor of the American Prospect. We've got a couple of things that we're going to talk to him about. Before we do, a couple words from our sponsors. Your glow up starts from within. And no, it doesn't require an injection. Prolon's 5-day fasting mimicking diet is proven to deliver real results through deep cellular rejuvenation. What kind of results? You get fat loss. You get metabolic reset, radiant skin that will have you looking your best and feeling confident all through the fall. Prolon is a plant-based nutrition program, features soups, snacks, and beverages designed to nourish the body while keeping it in a fasting state, triggering cellular rejuvenation. I don't know what's going on with me. And renewal. And the next generation builds on the original Prolon with 100% organic soups, teas, a richer taste, and ready-to-eat meals. It's developed over decades at USC's Longevity Institute, backed by top U.S. medical centers. Prolon has been shown to support biological age reduction, metabolic health, skin appearance, fat loss, and energy. I did mine a little over, a year and a half ago again, and I'm gearing up to do another 5 days. It was much, I thought it was going to be absolutely miserable, but I actually felt great during it. And
you were very energized. I kind of want to do it this year with you.
I was very energized, and it was also like just, a good feeling to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. Apparently, according to the research on this at the USC Longevity Institute, a couple of times a year really can help. Helps with some process with the cells where the older cells sort of die off and get replenished. It happens sometime like around day 3 or 4. Your body thinks that it's like, it mimics fasting and it reacts. For a limited time, you can be first in line to experience the new next gen at special savings. Prolon's offering you 15% off site wide plus a $40 bonus gift when you subscribe to their 5-day nutrition program. Just visit prolonlife.com/majority. That's prolonlife.com/majority. Claim your 15% discount and your bonus gift. prolonlife.com/majority. Head over there, prolonlife.com/majority. Check this out. It is it's a fascinating program. Also, today, want to remind you that we have forged a bit of a partnership with Current Affairs magazine. If you like deep, thoughtful, progressive analysis, which I imagine that's why folks are here listening to the show, or maybe it's my Chuck Schumer glasses. You're going to love the print or digital version of Current Affairs magazine. Current Affairs combines intelligent commentary, biting political satire, and really beautiful artwork to produce one of the country's most elegant and informative magazines, and it's all ad-free. Current Affairs is a fantastic complement to the Majority Report. It delivers hard-hitting, totally independent, and entertaining coverage of the most important political, social, and economic issues of our time. You can use the code Majority Report, all one word, for 30% for a year on any subscription of your choice. You get 30% off with the code Majority Report at currentaffairs.org/subscribe. Enter the code Majority Report at checkout. Offer expires October 31st. We will put a link, obviously, to that in the podcast and YouTube description. That's currentaffairs.org/subscribe and use the code Majority Report, all one word. All right, quick break. When we come back, I'll be interviewing David Dayen. This is a conversation we had last night on what the Democrats are, or what Chuck Schumer and Hakeem Jeffries are planning to do in terms of the government shutdown. Spoiler alert, you're not going to like it. And also what's happening with the remedy part of the Google trial, at least on one of their cases of monopoly, and what's happening at the Federal Trade Commission. Quick break, back with David Dayen. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Joining us now, the executive editor of the American Prospect and host of the Prospect Week in Review podcast.
Host the weekly roundup, co-host of Organized Money.
That's right. I'm very busy.
And this week we have Senator Elizabeth Warren on the show.
Whoa. All right. David Dayen. Welcome to the show. Coming in and bigfooting us a little.
Coming in hot.
Well, all right. That's apropos because Elizabeth Warren, obviously known for her work in the antitrust realm of the party. Many of the trust busters that we had during the Biden administration sort of came from the Warren wing of the party. Yes. And this week we had two sort of major developments or non-developments, I guess one could say, in the attempt to diminish corporate power realm.
Right.
That I want to talk to you about. And then also we can talk a little bit about the Democratic strategy on sure. The government shutdown. But let's start with this. I am quite sure that sometime last year we spoke. We've spoken to probably your co-host, too, Matt Stoller, and others about the Google, the cases against Google that were taking place last year. And in one of those cases, Google was found to have been engaging in anti-competitive practices. They had violated antitrust laws. They were found guilty of being a monopoly by...
Liable. You have to say liable. Lawyers will get you because okay. It was a civil case, not a yes. not a case where one
Fair.
Has guilt.
Liable for being a monopoly. Although that's ironic based upon what has happened subsequently, because their liability seemed to have been not terribly deep. But this was a D.C. District Court. The judge was Judge Amit Mehta. No relationship.
No relationship to the company? No.
To the company Meta.
No.
Right?
He's not. No.
And so the judge found Google liable for being a monopoly. And this was the remedy sort of phase of
right.
the trial where they determine what we're going to do to fix that. You're liable
right.
for being a monopoly. So now it's time to pay the piper, as it were.
You can think about it like a criminal being found guilty of a crime. And then there's a sentencing phase to figure out what we're going to do to punish the criminality. So it's
but
like
I would also
that.
Say it's almost like
phases.
More. It's also the quality of restorative justice. What can the defendant do to fix the what
right
has
in been- this case, because it's you're talking about a business. Yes, that you are sentencing the business effectively to do something to make sure that there are actual stipulations on what the remedy is supposed to do. It's supposed to end the illegal monopoly. It's supposed to disgorge the company of the fruits of that illegal monopolization, and it's supposed to make sure that this doesn't happen again with this particular company. That's what a remedy phase of a monopolization trial is supposed to do, and there's binding Supreme Court precedent on district courts to effectuate that.
And in the conversations I had as we prefaced the remedy with you mm-hmm. and others, you know, there was some question as to how effective the remedies will be. Will they go? This ruling that came out, it's almost as if efficacy was not the issue. The issue is whether you're going to do anything at all. It was bizarre. Yeah. I mean, that's the way I would characterize it. But
it's a horrible, cowardly ruling. And I should say to start that Google has been found liable of being a monopoly in three separate cases. This is only one of those three. This case involves Google search, which we all know literally Google is a verb meaning to search for something at this point on the internet. And this was the nut of this trial was that Google was maintaining its monopoly by paying browsers or devices, companies like Apple or maybe Mozilla for the Firefox browser, for default status for their search engine on a browser on a phone, and paying huge sums of money, $26 billion paid to Apple in 2021 for maintaining this default status, which obviously, if they're paying that much, it was probably worth it to Google, right? Because that default status, which people normally just sort of go along with, means that they were maintaining their dominance in the search market. 90% of all search goes through Google.
If you're on your iPhone and you put in a search term in the URL bar, yeah, it goes to Google.
Goes to Google. That's right. And Google pays for that. Google pays a lot of money so that that happens. And so the judge last year said that is monopolistic conduct. Now, you would think if that's the case, the least that the judge would do would be to say, Google, you can't pay another company to be the default status in a browser. That is not the case. Judge Mehta said Google is allowed to continue paying for placement in these browsers, in these devices. And he said that, oh, but the deals don't have to be exclusive. They can't be exclusive deals. So in other words, Apple could get payment maybe from another company other than Google and use that to determine whether or not they're going to use what they're going to put into default. However, in this very ruling, Judge Mehta says, well, and I could get you the exact quote, but what he says effectively is Google has so much money that if they pay a lot of money to a browser or a device company, because that device company is going to want to continue to renew their business, they're going to put Google in the default, and that means we're not going to have a lot of competition in this industry. That's literally in the ruling where he says you're allowed to still do that.
Which is basically a monopsony, right? They've got a monopoly as a buyer because they have so much money that nobody can afford to lose them as the buyer on some level.
Right. And the reason they have all this money is because of the extreme amount of revenue they've been able to derive from having this illegal monopoly. And as we know, in search, the more data you have, the more queries you get, the better the search engine becomes, because it gets more queries, it can refine that information. So literally, that's the mother's milk, having that data. And so maintaining the monopoly through this default search is literally what creates the money that allows it to then pay back, you know, give a tip, essentially, to the browsers and the device companies and maintain this dominance.
How does the judge, like, justify any of this? Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't understand how you find them civilly liable for being a monopoly and then ignore the three requirements of you and right. not just do insufficient stuff. It seems it basically just like you say, like, well,
I mean, we should say what Mehta did sentence them to do. So it says the deals can't be exclusive. They can't be tied together. And then he did say that Google needs to give up some of its search data to other companies so that they can improve their products, thereby, you know, hopefully improving competition. Now, this could help on the margins, but in reality, if you're still going to have those default settings, you're probably in good shape of maintaining that monopoly.
Right.
So that's what he did. And as far as why he said, oh, you can keep paying as Google, you can keep paying Apple, you can keep paying Mozilla, he basically said that if we take away this money from these browsers and device companies, they might not be able to deliver good products anymore. So he's basically saying poor Apple, one of the richest companies in the world, poor Apple, if they don't get this $26 billion, your iPhone might not be as good, which is crazy on a number of levels. First of all, really, we're worried about Apple's bottom line here. Second of all, this was a lawsuit about Google and the search market. And Judge Mehta is basing his remedy on what it would affect, how it would affect the phone market, which he didn't study, which, you know, is not part of the case whatsoever. So that was a really shocking and I would say illegal part of this ruling. The other big thing that Judge Mehta said is that, well, fortunately, there's competition now in the search market because of AI. He basically said that, look, AI companies are getting a lot of venture capital money. They're going to create competitors to Google, things you can search on. And so we're all good here. We don't have to really go very far into punishing Google because of that. Now, the reality is that if you train an AI model, it only knows what it knows up to the end of that training. The only way for an AI model to have continuing knowledge about the world is to hook it up with a search engine. And the only search engine out there is Google.
Hits is Google, right. Well,
so yeah.
Is there, I mean, I don't, I guess it would be the government if, want, is there a way to appeal? I mean, I can understand, yeah, like maybe Google can appeal.
Both sides can appeal.
Okay.
And both sides, in at least at some level, are likely to appeal. So this is a really interesting case where you're going to have a cross appeal, because here's the reason why Google will appeal. Even though they got everything they wanted out of this remedy, there's still this verdict that says they're a monopoly in search. And private litigants can use that as a precedent to sue Google over various levels of conduct. And they're doing that. There are private cases against Google in that realm. So they want to appeal to strike down the ruling itself, the liability phase of the ruling. Why the government might appeal is because this is a crappy remedy.
Right.
Now, is the Trump administration going to appeal this? I don't think so, because what did we see last Thursday? Trump with every big tech CEO having dinner and them being completely obsequious and fawning all over him. He's been big tech's errand boy all over the world, threatening other countries to impose tariffs if they put taxes or regulations on big tech. I don't think he's too interested in pursuing this any further. However, there were partners to the Justice Department in this case, and those were at the state level. So there are several states that would have the ability to appeal this remedy, including the state of Colorado, which was the lead among the states on this Google case. And the AG there, Phil Weiser, is running for governor next year against Michael Bennett, the senator from Colorado, by the way. And I think, you know, attacking an oligarch like Google might play well in his election campaign for governor. So I do think that the states will probably appeal, and also Google will appeal, and you'll have this unique kind of cross appeal going on.
When will we know whether any of those states end up there doing their
appeal? Pretty soon. I don't have a timeline for you, but it's likely that we'll know pretty soon how they're going to attack it.
Okay, good. So we're going to have another bite at that apple. Let's talk about
I should also say that Google was found to be a monopoly in two other cases, and one of them involves its advertising technology, its online advertising market. They were found to be a monopoly in that. And that remedy phase actually starts in a couple weeks. So we're going to see this again. And Judge Brinkema, who is in Virginia, who is the trial judge in that case, has been much more of a hardliner on Google than Judge Mehta, who is an Obama appointee. That, like, this reads like if Obama was a judge, very, very sort of even-handed, don't make waves kind of thing. And I think Judge Brinkema is going to probably bring a stronger ruling against Google.
Interesting. All right, let's turn to the other sort of, I guess, anti-corporate measure,
yeah.
Or at least I don't even know if you call it anti-corporate as much as it is simply just, you know, doing something to level the playing field between the coercive
pro-worker
nature. Yes, pro-worker.
Yeah.
And that is during the Biden administration, Lina Khan, as chair of the Federal Trade Commission, had propagated a rule, a ban on non-compete agreements. I characterized that that ban. How wide was it? How many people would have been subjected, or I should say, are subjected to non-compete that otherwise wouldn't be if that ban had remained? Or
millions of people is the answer. One in five Americans are subject to a non-compete agreement currently. One in five working Americans. And
it's not just executives.
Not just executives. We're talking about pet groomers. We're talking about janitors. We're talking about fast food workers. A whole host of industries have been subjected to non-compete agreements because they're not really about protecting business trade secrets anymore. They're really about suppressing wages. This is about saying to your worker, you can't go to another company in this field, and therefore you can't have your services bid up. Yep. In the attempt to sell your labor elsewhere, and therefore you're stuck with whatever wage I give you. So that's what's going on here. And the FTC estimated when they put this rule out that it would bring $400 billion over 10 years back into the pockets of workers as a result of this. So that's a stunning number of money that's really being cheated by people because they're not allowed to bid up their wages in the marketplace.
What did the ban ever get instituted, and for how long?
No, it did not get instituted because it was finalized and set to go into effect, but there were a number of lawsuits and there were differing opinions issued in those lawsuits. So a judge in Pennsylvania said, they rejected a lawsuit from a corporation and said the non-compete agreement can go forward. But a separate judge in Texas said, no, this was an illegal authority by the FTC, and we're going to block the non-compete agreement. So you had these differing agreements. And, usually what happens in that case is it gets funneled up eventually to the, higher courts and eventually the Supreme Court. But before that had a chance to happen, we had a changeover in power in Washington. And the new FTC under Andrew Ferguson had to make a decision as to whether to defend the cases or not. And what happened last Friday is that Ferguson, the chair of the FTC, who previously voted against finalizing the non-compete ban, so it was pretty clear what he was going to do,
right,
said, I am not going to defend this ban in court. I'm not going to defend the ruling that was in Texas that is now at the Fifth Circuit the Fifth Circuit's in Texas and Louisiana. And I'm going to accede, basically. I'm going to surrender to the ruling of the district court, and therefore that extinguishes the non-compete ban entirely.
Does the ruling in Texas in the Fifth Circuit supersede the ruling out of Pennsylvania, which is in, I'm not sure which circuit it is, but obviously a different circuit? This is when you go to the Supreme Court very often, almost always, when there are circuit court differences, because you can't have one federal law existing in one quarter of the country and then being different or non-existent in another quarter of the country. So what happens?
Indeed, that is not how it, that is you, what you've described is how it's supposed to work. But because the FTC said, nope, we're not prosecuting these cases anymore, and therefore we give up, the Fifth Circuit is right, or not the Fifth Circuit, but the district court judge in the Fifth, underneath the Fifth Circuit is correct. They're not prosecuting the case in Pennsylvania, and they're not prosecuting the case in Texas, and therefore it's just over. And that's essentially what they've done.
I guess why what is most relevant about that, I mean, to me, is in the event that Donald Trump allows for elections, we have those elections, Donald Trump loses that election, and a Democrat wins or beats J.D. Vance or Don Jr. or whomever it is, how easy or difficult would it be for the next Federal Trade Commission chair to say, we are reviving these bans against non-compete?
Well, it's an interesting question because weirdly, in an attempt to cover this all up, the FTC is kind of reviving it already in a weird kind of fashion. The day before they decided to surrender on this nationwide ban, they issued a one-off enforcement action against the largest pet cremation services company in the country, which is a private equity roll-up, by the way, in case I needed to tell you that.
Of course.
They said, we're stopping this company from these non-compete bans that they are from these non-compete agreements that they're forcing their workers to sign. And in a statement, Andrew Ferguson said something like, the Trump-Vance FTC will never stop fighting for workers. And literally they stopped fighting the next day. But the other thing that they did on Thursday, the day before, you know, basically ending the non-compete ban nationwide, is they issued what is called a request for information, a public comment period to about the scope of non-compete bans across the country. Now, this the scope of non-compete agreements, I should say, I keep saying bans. The ban, the rule on non-competes already went through a year's long process of looking at the scope of non-compete agreements across the country. There were 26,000 public comments that the FTC received about the non-compete rule, almost all of them saying, go ahead and do this. And here's Andrew Ferguson, who, you know, we have a bunch of nicknames for, but my personal favorite is what Burt Reynolds used to write in Celebrity Jeopardy as his name in on Saturday Night Live, which was Turd Ferguson. Andrew Ferguson says, oh, no, I just want to study non-competes. So we're going to do another public comment period and people can tell us how bad these things are. As if they're engaged in a real process to deal with the scourge of non-compete agreements. So to answer your question in a long-winded way, if Democrats take back power and take back the FTC, they're going to have a record of about non-compete agreements and what they are and who they affect and what the harms are. And presumably they would be able to return to adjudicate this rather quickly.
Because there's going to be a record that's going to be provided for them as the Trump administration pretends that it cares about workers.
Correct.
Leading up to that. Well, I guess. Thanks for that. that's something.
Yeah, right.
All right. Let's move on to one other topic that you've been writing about. We are 21 days, I think it is, from the potential government shutdown.
Yeah.
People remember, I think it was back in March, the government needed to be funded again. And Chuck Schumer ended up leading, I think it was like 12 Democrats, but initially it was closer to like 6 or 7 or 8. They needed to provide those votes for the Republicans to pass a budget. And many people said, don't do this. Donald Trump is like a burgeoning authoritarian. Doge is running around. Elon Musk is shutting down all sorts of agencies. They are talking about rescission, pulling back money that has already been appropriated by Congress.
Right.
And Chuck Schumer's argument at the time was, well, a government shutdown is exactly what Trump wants, which he could have easily orchestrated if that's what he wanted. But let's give Chuck Schumer the benefit of the doubt that
you give Chuck Schumer the benefit of the
in
doubt
in this very narrow place that Donald Trump was playing, you know, 10 level chess here.
Mm-hmm.
And then what they'll do is they'll shut down things like Medicaid, or they'll defund agencies, or gosh knows what. He didn't say they'll make ICE the largest federal larger than armies.
If we only had access to the future, we could have figured out that Chuck Schumer was full of crap.
Right. If there had been some document like, you know, what we're going to do in 2025 by the Republicans.
Right.
Call it like their project.
Right. Like describing the whole project.
Then maybe Chuck Schumer could have seen that's what they were doing. But
right.
Nevertheless, we're back here again. Yeah. Chuck Schumer voted to fund, and it wasn't even a clean budget resolution. It also had like a clause where the Congress would not be responsible for tariffs. So it got the Republicans off the hook in the House, reversing Donald Trump's. And it also had some other funding of stuff that the Republicans wanted. But we're back here again.
Yep.
Even Schumer's biggest supporters, folks like Ezra Klein, who are sort of
friend of the show,
friend of yours. Even Ezra Klein is now saying, well, it was a good idea then, but it's a bad idea now, because somehow it seems like, I mean, look, Donald Trump has done all the things that Chuck Schumer said he would have done during a government shutdown, but worse, and has done so not totally undercover, but, you know, most people don't know the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau has lost 80% of their staff. Most people don't know that they're, you know, that all these grants have gone away, that we've destroyed Health and Human Services, that the FDA, the USDA, I mean, on and on and on. Most people don't know this because most people don't follow this stuff. So they don't realize how much of a crisis the U.S. government is in right now. They don't know about FEMA. They don't know about all these things because people live their lives. And, you know, they're got to make money and deal with your kids and whatever it is. So Chuck Schumer.
I mean, the reality, the number that comes, that I think is most prominent in this, is that at the Appropriations Committee in the Senate, Patty Murray's minority staff has estimated that the Trump administration is currently withholding $410 billion in grants that were appropriated by Congress. In other words, as one of these budget deals, they said, we're going to give $400 billion to X, Y, Z, and Q. And Trump has just illegally withheld that money. And yet we're thinking about how are we going to do another budget deal where we give this, you know, we appropriate this money that Trump has already shown no willingness to abide by.
And in the wake of that deal, you had people, even like Nancy Pelosi, saying like, well, making a deal where you get nothing out of the deal, which is what Chuck Schumer brought home for the Democrats at that time.
Right.
Not a promise not to do rescission. Nothing. Zero. Less than zero. He's now a little bit embarrassed about it. And so they're coming up of what the get can be. And they have come to the get to something that it seems to me Republicans desperately want to give, but want to be forced into giving, because Republicans are looking at one of the first, it seems to me, almost universal accountability moments where it cannot be ignored. And that is essentially a healthcare cliff. Describe it to us.
Yeah. So in the Inflation Reduction Act, actually, initially in the American Rescue Plan, but then extended in the Inflation Reduction Act, the Democrats created new subsidies for the Affordable Care Act exchanges. So if you get your coverage in these marketplaces, before these new subsidies were added, there was a cliff in there where if you made over a certain income level, you suddenly had to pay a lot more for your health insurance. You lost all the subsidies. And so that got smoothed out, and basically across the board, the subsidies got more generous so that we had, you know, something approaching true affordability in these marketplaces. It wasn't universal healthcare, but by and large, these exchanges were much more affordable because of this and because the subsidies were expanded. And the last time this passed in the Inflation Reduction Act, it was for two fiscal years, 2024 and 2025 at that point. And so at the end of 2025, these enhanced subsidies expire and we would go back to the old system. And what that means for an individual, we've heard some stories about health insurance rates going up, and that's largely because of the Medicaid cuts and the Big Beautiful Bill and some of the other things. Health insurance rates are probably going up 6% or so. And for exchange coverage, they're going up something like 18%. But this is separate from that. These are the subsidies that allow you to afford that insurance. And if those subsidies are taken away, people affected by this could see, on average, more than a 75% increase in the cost of their health insurance. An incredible number, almost double the cost of their health insurance. And
overnight.
Millions of people that, yeah.
Overnight.
Overnight. And the Congressional Budget Office has looked at this and said, okay, how many people are not going to be able to afford health insurance as a result of this? And they said 5 million people. So 5 million people are going to, according to this estimate, lose their health insurance because they will no longer be able to afford it. And those who will be able to afford it will just sort of barely hang on, right, with an increase of over 75%.
Okay. And so people should understand this is coming from two directions. One, we have the biggest increases in insurance that we've probably seen maybe in a decade.
Since the ACA.
Since the ACA. So 2014, a decade. Yeah. And then on the other side, the contraction, if not the elimination of subsidies that helped a lot of people do that.
Yeah.
In the calculation, 5 million people are going to lose it because of how expensive it is to them. Have we figured out what the rate increase is going to be in the following year with 5 million less customers?
Right. It's going to get worse and worse.
Right. It's just going to exponentially.
That's what we know about insurance. Like if you have a smaller risk pool, that means there's more of a chance that one person getting sick increases your costs. And then as an insurance company, you have to set rates that way. And there could be a death spiral in the exchanges if they just become more and more unaffordable. Okay. So, we're looking at year one here and the 75% increase, but it's going to keep going up.
Let's go back to when John McCain gave his thumbs down for the repeal of the Affordable Care Act back in 2017, 2018. I can't remember exactly which year it was. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump was furious.
It was 17. But
the Republican Party was largely thankful because they had no replacement for this. Now, they right. all wanted to vote against the ACA because that became sort of a totem for the Republican Party.
Right.
But John McCain knew he was doing this, and a lot of the Republicans knew he was saving the Republican Party from themselves.
Right.
Now, Chuck Schumer is in the position of John McCain because
right.
the Republican Party desperately wants to avoid 5 million people losing their health insurance.
And others and a large section of the middle class paying a lot more for health insurance. Let's just say, even before this, you know, this deal we're about to discuss or proposed deal was put together, Republicans were talking amongst themselves. Oh, I think we're going to have to extend those ACA subsidies because if we don't, we're really screwed in the election.
And
so they were planning to do it themselves. Not, I mean, it wasn't definite. They might not have gotten there, but there was going to be this big fight where they would either do it themselves or fail to get it done and then face the whirlwind of in next November.
But they were also between a rock and a hard place, because voting to expand or maintain Obamacare is poisonous.
Poisonous to their base. Absolutely. And so they were in a really, really tough spot.
All those Congress people are like, I don't want to get primaried for my right. And if I do this, I'm giving weaponry to some lunatic in my district to primary me from the right.
And yet they know this is something I need, because in the general election, I'm going to get pilloried for
exactly.
it.
Exactly. And so what they need is cover to have this done. And Chuck Schumer is like, hi,
I've got cover.
I've got something for you.
The Baileys want me to cover it.
And to be clear, Democrats could also agree to this legislation outside of the budget. They could say, like, this could be a separate, it doesn't have to be part of the budget deal.
Doesn't have to be part of the budget deal. It's obviously, you know, you could pass legislation on this anytime. There is a bill, there are two bills in Congress already to extend these premium tax credits. One extends it for 1 year, and this is another important part of this. One of these bills, which was put together by a bunch of frontliners, you know, people who are worried about losing their election, bipartisan, says let's extend it for 1 year. In other words, get it past the midterms, then we'll deal with it after that. Another bill put together by Democrats says let's make it permanent. And you know, the question is, what is Schumer going to bargain for? Is he going to say, I won't give you votes for the budget unless you extend it for 1 year? Or I won't give you votes for the budget unless you make it permanent? If you make it permanent, there are a lot of reasons we can discuss why that's still a bad idea, but at least it's permanent, right? Imagine him saying, okay, if you extend it for 1 year, you know, just to get Republicans past the midterms, then you'd be giving something Republicans need in exchange for passing a budget, which is something Republicans want. So, like, what is the trade here?
There is no trade. This is, again, Schumer just trying to figure out how he can capitulate without
and save face.
Yeah. And Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries are desperate for Democrats not to understand this dynamic, it seems to me.
Right.
Because
and they still have this pathology where they see themselves as the responsible party, and they can't imagine a world where they shut down the government. Even if Trump is violating the law, even if he is usurping the power of the budget, the power of the purse from Congress.
Do you think it's still this pathology, or do you think it's just they're in service of some other constituency? I mean, this is absurd.
I just don't think they're prepared for, let's say they go with this. I mean, I don't agree with it, but let's say they go with it and they say, okay, we're not passing a budget unless you extend the tax subsidies. And then Trump says, no. I don't think they're prepared for what to do in that instance, because they don't want, you know, like if you're in a negotiation and you're offering something as a condition, and you're not willing to walk away from the table, then what you're offering is meaningless.
And the idea that, like, it's just stunning to me. This is such malpractice, because we now see Democrats, like, you know, they're Republicans have higher approval ratings than Democrats right now. It's shocking. It is shocking.
People saying, yeah, but, you know, Democrats still have higher ratings on health care. So if they can back Republicans into a corner on health care, this can be our ask. And this is a winnable fight. I don't know. It's 50 dimensional chess that doesn't make any sense to me. You're basically relieving Republicans of the consequences of their own actions and not getting any kind of assurances that, oh, I'm not going to no guardrails about not following the budget that you're about to pass with them, et cetera, et cetera.
How close is this deal into happening. I mean, I'm reading the things.
I don't think it's very close. I mean, I think that
Johnson's
it's something...
like, oh, this is not something they desperately want. This, it seems to me, yeah. The Republicans desperate that like this is such a trap. It seems.
I think the leadership would be happy with it, but I still think Republicans have some problems on their right in terms of people who absolutely don't want to pass an extension of these subsidies. And they're concerned, Mike Johnson still has, the right wingers still have the ability to depose him from the speakership, right? So there's still problems there on the right. And Trump has not shown any aptitude or interest in any kind of negotiation with Democrats throughout this entire term. So, I think it's something that certainly there's a trial balloon out there. Democrats are thinking about offering this. I don't think they've formally offered it yet. But if they do, I think there's an interesting dynamic on the right as to whether they would be able
they
and
will
willing
be
to accept it.
I will tell you right
you
now.
You believe they would.
Look, everybody thought that they would capitulate, that the right would have essentially sunk
right.
Every other whatever it's been, the budget resolution, yeah. The single bill, the big, beautiful bill, on and on and on. And they always capitulate. Somebody's always just got to say to Trump, like, this is the safest thing for you. And boom, it will happen. Homework for people right now. If you live in a Republican's district, you call and you say no extension of the subsidies for the for Obamacare. I will not tolerate that. If you live in a Democratic district, you say no deal with the Republicans. We need to shut the government down unless Republicans are willing to fund the government and promise that a whole litany of things.
Right. I mean, there are a lot of things you could argue over that you could get in exchange for a budget deal. But it's just hard for me to conceive of doing a deal with Donald Trump, who has been unwilling to hold up his side of any bargain. Like, why are you negotiating with this person?
Absolutely. The guy has shown that he's a complete, he has total disregard for our laws.
And I should say, it's good that Ezra said that very plainly.
I'm very happy to see him here. And it would have been nice if he took a cue from Jamelle Bouie and had done it 7 months ago, or I should say 11 months ago.
But whatever.
Better late than never, I guess.
Yeah.
And so, yes, we'll take that. And hopefully they listen to him in a way that Joe Biden listened to Matt Iglesias. we will see. David Dayan, you are the guy that all these people should be listening to. They should be reading the American Prospect on a daily basis. They should be listening to Big Money.
Organized Money.fm is where you go to
.fm, and of course
episodes.
Your week in review at the Prospect on Fridays, available on demand. David Dayan, always a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
All right, folks. We're going to head into the fun half. Just a couple of updates. Dayan wrote about the FTC reversal, essentially, on the non-compete clause. It will probably cost workers about $400 billion in over a decade. That would have been gained from that non-compete rule. Because the non-compete clauses in these contracts depress wage growth in addition to costing people jobs. And I don't know how you calculate having to retrain for a different job, et cetera, et cetera. So a heads up on that. And over the coming days, we'll talk about what the Democrats could ask for instead of giving the Republicans a gift in the form of them being forced to save the ACA without having to actually exercise any agency. It could be things like you can't racially profile ICE can't racially profile, which, you know, one would think that the Supreme Court would have ruled something to that effect. Or it could be like no rescission, or it could be, I mean, there's a whole host of things could be passed or asked for by the Democrats. Have the IRS go after corporations and millionaires, and instead of rolling back, policing their use of loopholes. I mean, there's a whole host of things that one could use that forcing Republicans to vote against and force them to vote against not allowing racial profiling. I mean, it goes on and on. But, you know, you go to war with the leadership you have, unless you also go to war with the leadership you have to replace them.
But wasn't this Schumer's whole theory of negotiation, which is that Trump would be so unpopular by this time that he would be able to get more after being more agreeable with Republicans earlier in the year?
It's working.
Let's see.
Look at the Republicans are running away from him.
We will have an experiment in that very theory in the coming months.
I think we should actually dig up some of the interviews that he gave in the wake of that.
Definitely.
As an example. Remember, he was also saying, like, we don't necessarily have a constitutional crisis. I mean, he's literally bringing the military into blue cities at this point.
I mean, he had taken over the power of the purse as well.
Folks, we're going to head into the fun half. Just a reminder, it's your support that makes this show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials, but you also get the fun half. And also, feel free to send the show to your friends. Give us a – they still have reviews on Apple Podcasts.
On iTunes.
On iTunes.
Your time machine.
Bathroom walls.
Yeah, that's helpful.
Actually, that's surprisingly very productive.
I mean, write the number on the bathroom walls of like Republican areas.
Pickup spots?
Yeah, pickup spots. And then you'll get the libertarian callers back.
Let's hope. 646-257-3920 is that number. Also, don't forget the Discord, majoritydiscord.com, and AM Quickie. Check out the AM Quickie 3 times a week for free. Email 9 a.m. in the morning. Whitney and Corey do a great job of giving you the news that you're going to need to know for the course of the day. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code MAJORITY, get 10% off. Matt, Left Reckoning.
Yeah, Left Reckoning tonight. Got an interview on Iran. Also, we're going to be talking about this huge Jeffrey Epstein story about J.P. Morgan Chase in New York Times. And James Tallarico announces a U.S. Senate bid in Texas. And I have some reservations about Tallarico. I don't like that he took crypto money. But in a race that is him versus Colin Allred, I am all the way with the church boy.
So Allred is going to try again?
Yeah, he's already announced.
I didn't. I knew you guys were talking.
He's a funding machine, so yeah.
You and Griscom were talking about this a bit in Chicago. I hadn't known it was official, but I interviewed Allred back when he was a Justice Democrat and he wasn't taking any corporate PAC money. He won and he got into office and he turned right around and became the most like centrist Democrat possible. And he just lost handily the last time he ran for Senate. So we're going to do that again, I guess.
But he made a lot of money because you get into a room with Dem donors and you say, I'm a big, strong football man. And that's what we need to win in Texas. And they start writing checks.
Church boy is a perfect opposition to that.
I'll take the church boy over Colin Allred, definitely.
I will say, Tallarico went on Joe Rogan. And I have a friend who's kind of, you know, independent Rogan listener who said I really liked what he had to say. So I'm going to go with that guy as opposed to the proven loser from the last race.
I mean, obviously, getting that Senate seat, as annoying as the person's going to be, it doesn't matter who it is.
Exactly.
It honestly doesn't matter. As soon as they win, they're going to be our, like, if not our least favorite Democrat, probably close to it. But the reality is,
compared to replacement level,
yeah, I mean, they're just, we're not going to like them. That's just the case. There is just, we're in a situation where there's no way there's going to be 50 plus one Democrats who we're supportive of in terms of all their policies. It's just not going to happen. The number of Democrats who I appreciate in the Senate is probably in single digits. But the fact of the matter is that, like, you know, to the extent that we have judges who are stopping anything, it's a function of having a majority of the Senate. To the extent,
we won't rest.
I mean, hopefully, it would be nice if some of these Democratic senators were running against Chuck Schumer in the way that some Democrats used to run against Pelosi. But
you can bust the banner out.
I mean, honestly, someone should also run against Gillibrand, but we'll play some clips.
That's not until 2030. That's the thing, oh, that sucks. God. She just got reelected, and Schumer's not up till 2028. But this is the order.
Oh, I know. I know when Schumer's up.
This is the order. We primary Hakeem Jeffries first, then we primary Schumer, then we primary Gillibrand. These are the steps.
Also, check us out on Twitch. If you're on Twitch, you can assign your Prime subscription to us.
2,000 concurrent viewers on Twitch right now. Look at
whoa!
That.
Did we just get rated or something?
That's been pretty consistent.
It's there. Actually closing up to... Where are we at? I mean, that's about five times that on YouTube, but...
They need you growing. To say it, though, Sam. They want the Twitch streamers want you to say it.
Where's that box I bought? Because I want to say poggers and then have it echo. Poggers. See you in the fun half. Left is best. Jamie and I may have a disagreement.
Yeah, you can't just say whatever you want about people just because you're rich.
I have an absolute right to mock them on YouTube.
He's up there buggy whipping like he's the boss.
I am not your employer.
You know, I'm tired of the negativity.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to upset you. You're nervous, you're a little bit upset, you're riled up.
Yeah, maybe you should rethink your defense of that, you fucking idiots.
We're just going to get rid of you.
All right.
But dude.
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 You want to smoke this joint?
Yes.
Do you feel like you are a dinosaur?
Good shit.
Exactly. I'm happy now.
It's a win-win.
It's a win-win-win.
Hell yeah.
Now listen to me. 2, 3, 4, 5 times. 847-906-501-457. 2, 38, 56, 27, 1 half, 5 eighths, 3.9 billion.
Wow.
He's the ultimate math nerd.
Don't you see?
Why don't you get a real job instead of spewing vitriol and hatred, you left-wing Limbaugh?
Everybody's taking their dumb juice today.
Come on, Sammy.
Dance, dance, dance.
Ooh. Grandpa.
I had my first post-coital scene with a woman. I'm hoping to add more moves to my repertoire. All I have is the dip and the swirl.
Fine, we can double dip.
Yes, this is a perfect moment.
No.
Wait, what?
You make under $1 million a year. You're scum. You're nothing.
Excuse me? Fuck you, you fucking liberal elite. I think you belong in jail.
Thank you for saying that, Sam. You're a horrible, despicable person.
All right, gonna take a quick break. I want to take a moment to talk to some of the libertarians out there. Take whatever vehicle you want to drive to the library. What you're talking about is jibber jabber.
Classic. I'm feeling more chill already.
Good.
Donald Trump can kiss all of our asses.
Hey, Sam. Hey, Andy. Are you guys ready to do some evil?
Hitler was such an idiot.
That guy might be a Nazi.
Agree.
No.
Death to America.
You.
Yes.
Wow.
Wow, that's weird. No way! Unbelievable. This guy's got a really good hook.
Throw our hands up.
Ooh.
Wow.
got to get off.
No worries. I want to just flesh this out a little bit. I mean, look, it's a free speech issue. If you don't like me...
Hey, shut up.
Thank you for calling into the Majority Report. Sam will be with you shortly.
We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Viglin, fun half, ladies and gentlemen. Fun half. The Green Man God. The video of the flotilla boat on fire, does that look like a thermite grenade to you? It doesn't seem like a flare, like everyone keeps saying. I have to be honest with you.
It does not look like a thermite grenade.
Thank okay. you, Brian. We are not qualified.
I was just going
to
say.
That's why you're here, buddy.
If the
Tactical Brian.
Tactical Brian checking in.
I said that so seriously.
False.
I had a desk job.
But Brian's desk job in the military was thermite grenade assessments. That's
Brian,
it.
You got to start showing up in fatigues once we start putting
what
you on webcam.
What do I know?
Yeah.
I'm quite convinced that under everything Brian wears, he's got one of those like green shirt, t-shirts. That's it. That's
yeah.
his like
my OD green
yeah,
shirt.
Exactly. Yeah.
Dog tag.
Yep.
It said Catholic because I thought if I didn't put a religion, they wouldn't save me. On my dog tags.
Yeah. Well, oh, screw it. He's an atheist. We will. California Resistance. Sam, you should give info on how to switch the Prime / Twitch to you.
We did do that.
Yeah, it's in your account. You do.
Yeah, I mean, someone must have made a YouTube video about it. You know, if you have a Prime subscription, you got to.
We should
Twitch
do that, though. But for people who probably aren't on Twitch all the time, we should do that. Dark Soul, Brian needs to open all statements with, I've tactically ascertained. huge poll out today that has Zoran Mamdani up significantly against Curtis Sliwa, Eric Adams, and that other guy, Cuomo. Where do I have it? Oh, and even if Sliwa and Adams, well, I'll give you the numbers. The poll found 46% of likely voters plan to choose Mr. Mamdani, according to the New York Times in this Times Siena poll. His support spans racial and ethnic groups, but is especially strong among young and highly educated voters. By comparison, 24% of likely voters in New York City said they would support disgraced former governor Andrew Cuomo. The Times did not properly address him as disgraced. I added that. Who's running as an independent. 15% would back the Republican candidate, Curtis Sliwa. 9% favored Mayor Eric Adams, the scandal-scarred incumbent who's also running on an independent line. Why did they not refer to former governor Cuomo as scandal-plagued? He literally had to quit office because of a scandal.
He might be more scandal than human being.
He's
at this
certainly
point.
More scandal scarred than Eric Adams. He literally had to resign office because of the over a dozen accusations of sexual assault, and then spent billions of dollars of your taxpayer money defending himself.
Let alone what he did with putting people in nursing homes in the height of COVID.
Oh, the Moreland Commission, the IDC. I mean, it goes on
His
and on.
AIDS,
Everybody knows he's garbage.
Percoco's corruption scandal, yeah.
But nevertheless, if Sliwa and Eric Adams dropped out of the race, according to this poll, Mamdani would still lead 48 to 44% against Cuomo. However, on this day, today, the ballots are now locked in. So even if Adams and Sliwa were to leave the race and endorse Cuomo, their names would still be on there. So I would suspect that Mamdani's lead would actually be greater than 48 to 44. But the reality is that, you know, you're starting to see Democrats coalesce around Mamdani.
Their nominee in the primary, vote blue no matter who, all the Democratic primary voters who selected him as a Democrat. I don't care what Tom Suozzi says, who a Democrat is or who isn't. The
Wasn't
voters
Suozzi
think he's a Democrat.
Republican?
Yeah, yeah. Time to lecture the rest of us on it.
And then there's a couple of outliers, white-knuckled, who are still hanging on and not endorsing Mamdani. Just a couple of backbenchers, one being the leader of the Democrats in the Senate and one being the leader of the Democrats in the House.
Where are they from?
It turns out they're from New York. And it turns out Mamdani won both of the places where they live.
He won Jeffries' district by 12 points. And I will also add that the National Democrats will pretend they haven't even heard about Zohran or don't want to comment on the race because that's just commie New York. That's just New York politics. But it's interesting that the leaders of the Democrats in the House and the Senate are from New York, and you feel okay with them representing the interests of the party, a.k.a. donor fundraising money.
The arguments that Mamdani's programs are completely pie in the sky keep getting shot down one after another. New Mexico today, the whole state is now offering universal free childcare. The governor signed that. What was it? In Georgia has now opened up. Was it Atlanta opened up a...
Yes, Atlanta opened up a municipal grocery store in the middle of a food desert owned by the city. Communism, communism, communism.
Oh my gosh, those freaks in Atlanta. My God.
But did a Muslim guy
hippies,
do it?
Hippies. It's like San Francisco politics there in Atlanta. But Cuomo has a strategy, ladies and gentlemen, to overtake Mamdani. And the strategy, and this is just amazing. Before we pop this up on the screen, try and think that you are a consultant to Andrew Cuomo. You're getting paid a bunch of money, mm-hmm. a bunch of money. You went in there with the pitch of like, look, I understand the young people. Mm. I understand the internet. And I know where Mamdani's weak points are. And I know how to get you an internet win. Now, some of the stuff I tell you, you may not understand, but believe me, this is going to work. Mm-hmm. And then you're also, let's say you're, the other option is, you got Cuomo and he's in a room with some of his buddies who are fighting against the International Criminal Court. And they're sitting there going like, who, you know, how are we going to undermine Mamdani?
Right.
And the guys in the room are either like crazy ass donors to other crazy ass Zionists or whatnot. And they go like, who is the biggest villain that we can find?
Hmm.
And they scroll through all the things like, Farrakhan's not around anymore.
We killed Osama, right?
We killed Osama bin Laden, but he's not. I'm talking about like, you know, like who is in U.S. political life in New York who would be like in some way scare people. Jesse Jackson. No, that doesn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Colin Kaepernick. Nah, not really. Oh, I know. We're going to take this guy's picture. And when we do a press conference, we're going to show that Mamdani is actually tied in with, yes, Hassan Piker.
Whoa.
Imagine you are a New Yorker who knows who Hassan Piker is. When you see that picture of him with Zohran Mamdani, is your reaction going to be, oh, my God, Mamdani? had shook hands or had sat down at a table with Hassan Piker, is your reaction going to be like, oh my God, Zohran I was thinking of voting for, but Hassan Piker? Oh my God, that's terrifying. This is so out of touch. It's fascinating. Like, do people, I just don't get it. Like,
well, so you brought up the ICC. First of all, I'm impressed that Cuomo's outside and not doing this in a hotel conference room as he's been
Googling for
out.
Crowd size pictures
here. Yeah, maybe if they zoom out, you know, there'll be five different poster boards that represent the five pillars of Islam or something like that. It's crazy because they're trying to, one, audition for Zionist donors who hate Hassan. Two,
right, this is only the only person above the age of 45 in New York City who knows who Hassan Piker is the guy from the ADL.
It's all the people who are already voting for either Andrew Cuomo, Sliwa, or Eric Adams because they are hysterical Zionists that want to keep their money.
And then the ones who know who Hassan are specifically are the ones whose kids like him.
Exactly. Like, I love how New York is both so far left and commie that it's used as, like, a pejorative, but Andrew Cuomo thinks this is going to work in a general election. It's just so insane. And as if this is equivalent to, this is his response, by the way, to Zohran pointing out that Cuomo is collaborating with the fascist in the White House, Donald Trump, and was also, in late 2024, volunteering to do legal work for Benjamin Netanyahu, as you mentioned, Sam, who was being brought up on ICC war crimes charges. So, like, you have Cuomo associating with, you know, what I would argue is 21st century Hitler, Benjamin Netanyahu, and Donald Trump, who's not exactly popular in New York City and is not popular in the country anymore.
But a Twitch streamer.
But the Twitch streamer he did an interview with one time said something inflammatory like 6 years ago about how, I don't know, maybe what happened on 9/11, which was horrific and horrible, was a outgrowth of American foreign policy and belligerence in the Middle East. God forbid that's brought up. God forbid the American public is educated on the consequences of our violence and killing up to a million people in Iraq and helping, I mean, this is not relevant now, but helping Israel commit genocide and subjugating the Palestinians.
Well, first off, but if you, like, the sensitivity to 9/11 among New Yorkers obviously is greater for people who are of a certain age cohort, okay? And right. So, like, they're aiming this at a cohort of people who are already Cuomo voters, but they don't know who the guy is. They might as well say, you know, never mind just 9/11. They might as well also say, like, oh, he does really unethical things when he plays Among Us or whatever it is. Like, they, like, your average New Yorker who would possibly vote for Andrew Cuomo has no idea who Hassan Piker is. I'm sorry. It's just
what Twitch
they
is.
Don't like or Twitch is or whatever. Like, I don't understand. Like, people walking by this picture going like, I don't understand. What are we looking at? And the press still like it. It's just a bizarre strategy.
Anybody walking by is going to be like, who's that guy that's more handsome than Zohran? I thought he was the guy taking it home in the race.
This is such like the amount of money being extracted out of Cuomo. It's like almost like these pictures are almost animated. You can see them just taking the money from him.
Yeah, I want to get $5,000 a month from Andrew Cuomo for telling him to post the picture of Zohran with Nick Mullen.
I mean, honestly. It's just, it's really wonderful. I mean, that they're at this, I mean, that we are in September and we're at this stage of the election where they're like running out of ideas.
But that he's awash in money. This has to go somewhere, right? Like, this money has to go somewhere. It's got to go to poster boards.
All I'm doing right now is just sort of feeling like, how did we not capitalize on the amount of money that Cuomo has? We could have pitched anything to
him. You need to start a consulting firm.
Impressive.
There it is. We should just post this all across the city.
It just ran. It's just unbelievable.
Wait till New Yorkers hear about this.
I got a picture.
The joke he's made about Mario Kart.
Oh my god.
Let's play. What else did we have? That.
I mean, yeah.
Oh, yeah,
while we're on the topic.
And then we should definitely do Jesse Waters too.
Yeah.
Because this first, I've gotten recently into the Gilded Age, and. It's not...
getting big. People are talking about
well,
it.
Season... More people.
Show. It's really... Hottest show.
Oh, I wasn't talking about the show.
Season.
More people are talking about
yeah.
Gilded Age.
Gilded Age. Season 3, they made it more campy, and I really enjoyed that more. First two seasons, you know, you work through it. But this guy's really good, who plays the kind of Vanderbilt stand-in. And I found out from his Wikipedia page that he's a DSA member. So shout out to him. And he shot this ad with Zoran, which is pretty good.
This is about a New York Times story title.
Oh yes, there's been multiple stories about how people are gathering in the Hamptons with Cuomo, worried about Zoran Mamdani. No word if they're gathering around the Hamptons, going like this whole Hassan Piker thing is really problematic.
I can't even eat my lobster.
This is. A dramatic reading of the New York Times. How are the very rich feeling about the
August,
New York mayor's
race? Hamptons. Ocean breezes. Oversubscribed Tracy Anderson classes. Parking wards. And this year, with a New York City mayoral election looming in the fall, a freakout that the most sumptuous of summer staples hasn't sued. Even overpriced lobster salad can't seem to make people out here feel better. A veteran political fundraiser said, everyone is talking about it all the time. What they are talking about, for the most part, is whether anyone, specifically former Governor Andrew M. Cuomo or Mayor Eric Adams, can beat the Democratic Socialist Zoran Mamdani. In June, he dared to say on Meet the Press...
I don't think that we should have billionaires.
The Hamptons is basically in group therapy about the mayoral race. In other words, the plutocrats are panicking. Another recent benefit for Mr. Cuomo took place at the Southampton estate of the conservative media executive Jimmy Finkelstein and his wife Pamela Gross, a former advisor to First Lady Melania Trump. Mamdani has a great smile and is wonderfully articulate. His social media is entertaining, and his promises sound fine until you look at the fine print, and they're not realistic.
Yes. So he's kind of playing on his, like, Vanderbilt titan of industry union-busting character in the show. Great actor, really love him in the show, and also his politics, clearly, but... it's the unrealistic thing really travels. Like, just when you're talking to people... on the street about it or whatever, just like, I like what he has to say, but I don't know how realistic it is. And there's never anybody that knows whether or not it is realistic because they don't bother to look into the mechanics of it.
They can't even come up with the... I spoke to someone who said, like, this whole thing where you get free groceries.
Yes.
And I'm like, free groceries? What are you talking about? They're like, well, you go, he wants to do the city-run thing with the free groceries.
Right.
And I'm like, it's not free groceries. It's a grocery store that the city runs, but you pay for the... Oh, I thought it was free groceries. Well,
right.
That makes more sense.
Is $4,000 for a studio realistic?
Right.
A month?
Exactly.
Is that realistic?
Or the rent freeze. That's the other thing that they keep saying is so unrealistic. Bill de Blasio froze the rent multiple times. He just has to have a board
that
helps
that
him.
The rent freeze of
no
like
yes.
all
no.
Apartments around
the But
city.
The media doesn't explain it because Zoran explains on his website exactly how he's going to do it. The rent freeze, you can do it for the rent stabilized units through his board, which he will put on with people that he trusts, as opposed to Eric Adams, who put a bunch of real estate people on there. So it's actually, the rent freeze is maybe the most realistic and unilateral thing he can do very, very quickly. Now, if you want to talk about the free buses, yes, there may be an obstacle there because he wants to fund that by raising the corporate tax rate to match what it is over the water in New Jersey. And he's going to need buy-in from the governor on that front. But given the movement he's creating, she's in a primary challenge, and she has way more pressure on her to agree to Zohran, who's increasing in popularity, and what he wants from the state budget. So that's my explanation for all of the people out there that say it's unrealistic. Those are his three major policy planks, and it's actually quite realistic, given also that we just saw Atlanta do the food desert grocery store thing, and no one's screaming socialism down there.
Or Arizona, for that matter. I mean, yeah. Excuse me, New Mexico. It's
but it
absurd.
Just makes people feel smart, and it flatters their intellect for not getting behind the kind of politics that would change people's lives for the better. Because everybody that buys into the unrealistic argument is basically a wealthy old boomer who is overrepresented in our media and quoted constantly, or their opinions are inferred and editorialized in papers that they're supposed to be neutral, like the New York Times.
Well, like, I knew somebody who photographed a party out in the Hamptons, and I've never been there myself. They sent me a picture of a floral arrangement that was repeated 8 times across a path. And they asked me how much I guessed that floor arrangement was supposed to cost. Each one was $10,000. So the idea that people in the Hamptons say this is unrealistic is a little bit far-fetched to me. Like, I'm sorry, I don't care what
your version of realism is. Where would the money possibly come from?
Exactly. Like, how much did you pay to just to get there? Like, it's one thing coming from, like, a teacher or someone like a 50-year-old who's like living in the city being priced out of it, saying unrealistic because they've bought into ideology. That's just rich people like flattering themselves.
I'm not paid to say this, but I think it's Mom Donnie's completely unrealistic, and they should have gone with Josh Shapiro.
You enjoy my socialism says there's a job posting available to lead Cuomo's field campaign. So anyone out there can sell their soul for the low, low price of $5,800.
Please sign up for that job.
Oh, my God. Yes.
That's all he's paying?
DSA should actually direct some of their people.
Send it my way, please.
DSA should direct some of the volunteers they have just left over.
Oh, my gosh. Absolutely.
I am down.
Although I guess 58 for just 2 or 3 months of work is pretty good. But
everybody carries around like a little small photograph of Hassan Piker. And
yeah.
Like, do you want this? It's from California.
You do have to get your nipples pierced. That is one of the
we're a hostage pin to the interview.
All right. But seriously, let's think this for a moment. Yes, please. For how, if you are terrified, mm-hmm. at the polling that shows that capitalism is now like at a 15-year low in terms of what people think about it, if you are terrified at the incredibly broad-based enthusiasm for Zohran Mamdani and his democratic socialism, how do you push back on this? How do you stop this rising tide of socialism that you see? Well, Jesse Waters has an interesting idea on how to fight socialism. You might say fighting fire with fire.
A lot of fluff and very little beneath.
And Bernie kind of alluded to it. He's like, you know, he wears a nice suit. He's got a nice smile. And that can fool a lot of people. Trust me. I know, Kaylee. But they're on to something with the prices and all that. I mean, prices are still high. Can't Trump just bring in some corporate executives and just say, hey, guys, there's going to be a socialist revolution in this country if you guys don't do something. Please do something. I mean, you could do this with the heads of these universities. I mean, these tuition rates are out of control. Why doesn't he just say, guys, we're going to investigate you guys for monopoly, price collusion. Get this tuition down. Get this stuff down.
Yeah, he's working on it. Look, Scott Bessent is the best of the
okay,
best.
Okay, pause. Hold on for a second. I just want to go over this. So how do we deal with this this political program of attempting to make things more affordable? Why have a process? Just have Trump tell everybody make things more affordable.
It's sort of like you should just ask.
It's really more like literally saying this socialism is a danger. What we need is authoritarian communism to yeah. address it.
As long as it's from executives.
Right. As long as the state has the ability to dictate what prices are, we won't have to worry about the socialism.
Yeah. Yeah. I have a feeling that's not going to work, Jesse Waters. I have a feeling that they're going to find a way around it. That's why you need things like legislation and taxation to actually make this stuff happen.
Here's Kaylee, though, saying, don't worry. There's no reason to panic about the affordability crisis. Why? Because Scott Bessant said so.
Illusion. Get this tuition down. Get this stuff down.
Yeah, he's working on it. Look, Scott Bessent is the best of the best alongside Donald Trump. Scott Bessent said, I'm predicting Q4, you're going to see an accelerant on this economy. And already, if you look at it, 3.3% GDP growth, hundreds of billions of dollars of investment pouring into the United States. Donald Trump's cut taxes, deregulating. He has poured a fire on this economy. We're having to dig out from 4 years of Biden-era fecklessness, but we're getting there.
Listen, I am not a scientist, but when you pour a fire onto something, it burns. it burns. And you don't want the economy to burn.
It reminds me of the Weimar. They were burning money to stay warm.
He's pouring a fire on the economy. He sure is.
Well, she's almost revealing what they want, though. But that's why they want interest rates to be lowered, because they want to heat up the economy. And they don't necessarily care if that's going to create deeply horrible, consequences for people downstream.
There's no doubt that the cutting of rates could become inflationary. But the problem is that our economy is not growing. Yeah. And we have a massive job loss, and we have this huge drag on the economy in the form of tariffs. And so you can borrow money at a lower rate if you're a company, but are you going to invest that money in something right now? Are you going to say we're going to hire more people? Because why? All of the outlook of the economy looks like it's about to implode.
I'm no defender of the Biden economy, but the fact is it was growing, and that just growth wasn't shared. Now we're not sharing it or growing.
We were talking about this before the show. Past due car payments hit a record high.
It hasn't been this high since the Great Financial Crisis.
Credit card debt hit a record high, a collective $1.21 trillion. And that was a rise in Q2 from when it was a previous headline in Q1 about a record in credit card debt. Balances rose by $27 billion, let alone what we just saw with the employment numbers and including revisions for 2024, which is the hidden story, I think, in terms of what Democrats were unable to respond to, is that since there's all these issues with collecting unemployment data and we have these gray areas of the economy of gig work and underemployment, there wasn't, I think, a good enough understanding of how much people were hurting even prior to this. And Trump is just setting it on turbo drive or whatever with the tariffs, which are going to be inflationary directly on the rest of people in terms of how they deal with it. It's a compounding sales tax.
Let's just let Kaylee finish her.
Sorry, I thought we were done.
No, and Nicola says, I know you're not being serious, Sam, but please, for F's sake, don't call that nitwit plan communism. This is their representation of communism. It's you don't want central planning from the, and now it's just one guy dictating all the prices. But go ahead.
GDP growth, hundreds of billions of dollars of investment pouring into the United States, Donald Trump's cut taxes, deregulating. He has poured a fire on this economy. We're having to dig out from 4 years of Biden-era fecklessness, but we're getting there. And I can tell you this, by the midterms, I think you're going to have a very evident contrast between communist New York City and a thriving United States of America.
I don't think so.
Are people sick of this yet? This my entire life, all this tech innovation is going to make everyone's life great. Oh, crypto, just give it a few more years. AI, around the corner, it's going to change your life, make it all better. Now it's the Trump economy. It's not, look, it might look bad now. Wait till quarter four, or actually the midterms. And then everything's, we've pie in the sky when you die. This is like a long.
I have to say, the lead time on Besant's like oh, Q4 is going to be great. I mean, we're only 30 days from that less.
Right.
I get the sense that Besant feels like he ain't going to be around for much longer. I have a feeling he's thinking Q1 of 2026, and I'm out of here because I think she's right. I think they are pouring fire on this economy, and it is about to literally get fried.
Did you notice she said Scott's the best of the best besides Donald Trump?
Exactly.
Oh my God!
Yeah, you can't. Yeah. Crazy. He would be so pissed.
I mean, he's second best of the best.
Bring Kaylee to me
he's
now.
He's number two. Number two.
Before we do this, do we want to do 13, just the Gillibrand thing before we forget? Because it's more serious.
Yeah. Is it really 2030 for her?
Yep. She just got reelected. It sucks. But this is, as I said earlier, the House members are up every 2 years. So I think Hakeem Jeffries, primary challenge, 2026. But Schumer's up in 2028. Hopefully he resigns before then. I mean, it seems like he maybe has an understanding. He's a dead man walking, not literally, but in terms of leadership. And then Gillibrand's up in 2030. And the problem here is that she's also the head of the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee. Now, the Democratic Senatorial Campaign Committee and Chuck Schumer have been pushing one particular candidate in this race in Michigan, Haley Stevens. We didn't even play that clip of her talking about how she sounds like Marge Simpson, talking about how she's
I bring a full-size Bible.
Or Constitution.
Sorry.
Yeah, not a pocket Constitution, a full-size one.
Same.
And she is taking so much AIPAC money, and these are the candidates that the infrastructure of the Democratic Party, which is in New York State, as they talk about how Zoran is not representative of the rest of the country, the Democratic Party decided to, like, centralize most of its leadership in New York, but whatever. They're pushing these AIPAC-funded candidates. Gillibrand is behind all of this. And if you recall, after Zoran won, she went on a radio station and said that he has endorsed, she smeared him in an explicitly racist way.
Islamic Jihad supporter.
She said that he supports an Islamic Jihad against Jews. Okay.
She's not done. When was this? Do we...
It was yesterday.
This is like... was
no,
it
the camera's terrible.
Good.
But the words they often choose to use are very hurtful and harmful and are undermining. So I would work very hard with any Democrat who uses the type of language that is harmful and undermining and creative of anti-Semitism to tell them what it means and tell them how it's received. I will sometimes be effective, I will sometimes be ineffective. But 9 out of 10 Democrats are pro-Israel and want peace in the Middle East. The political concerns many Democrats have are around the political leaders. They don't like Prime Minister Netanyahu. They don't like the far-right coalitions. They find their words hurtful and destructive. And so they are frustrated because they don't know how to articulate political disagreement. And sometimes it comes out as anti-Israel. And I try very hard to explain that your intentions are one thing, but how you receive is another, and that's where we get the disconnect. And so I'm going to keep working hard to try to find a commonality, to try to assure that we can all be on the side of fighting against anti-Semitism, and try to get them to sign resolutions beyond advocacy issues, beyond, you know, to helping our campuses have the resources to ensure safety for all campus students. So I will work as hard as I can, Michael, to do exactly what you're saying, because it is very hurtful. And
okay, all right, I've had enough. But let's just, go from the end back. Mm. To reiterate this stuff about college campuses, when we have seen now how Donald Trump weaponized this as a way of stripping universities of research grants, of classes, of dictating what curriculum is, all of that in the name of supposedly allowing anti-Semitism to run rampant, when it's quite clear that all of those student protests, some of us at the time, but in retrospect, were all exactly right. And Donald Trump has literally used what she is continuing to espouse about what was happening on college campuses as a tentpole for his fascism. It was also a tentpole for his fascism when he was going after law firms who are now working pro bono to carry out his other fascistic plans in deporting all sorts of people. And so it's just, it undermines every message that supposedly the Democratic Party has in running against Donald Trump and the Republican Party. And then I'll also say, like, I don't know where she's getting her data from. If she's talking about 9 out of 10 Democrats, elected Democrats.
No, she's right on that. She's correct about that, most likely, I would say.
If that's what she's talking about, yeah. Like, because of the AIPAC money.
Let's put it up. Let's see. Well, this is the problem here. Can we get the Gallup and the Quinnipiac one I sent? Too.
Well, this one is important here.
This
scroll down.
You go, Sam.
This shows the Pew, I think it was. Go, okay. Scroll down here.
You go ahead.
Right here. Democrats more unified on views toward Israel than Republicans. And I'll say that's not positive. Pew Research Center from March of 2025. Democrats lean Dem. Percentage of surveyed U.S. adults who express negative views toward Israel is at 69% in 2025.
That's how
was at 53% in 2022. I mean, the fact of the matter is this has been changing, and certainly the Harris campaign was aware of it. And this is Israel at large, and not even in the context of specifically what they're doing or their government. Negative views towards Israel.
That's March. This was a month ago. 8% of Democrats, 8% support Israel's military action in Gaza. So if she had said 9 out of 10 Democrats, she had said 9 out of 100, she might have been actually kind of on the money if you were talking about who supports Israel right now in the voter base. But how about Quinnipiac? It's not just about the military action. I sent it. It's in my tweet. It's all right. I highlighted it. It's 77-11 in terms of Democrats who think Israel is committing genocide. This was the most recent poll on this. So she might be correct that 9 out of 10 Democrats are corrupted.
Elected
Democrats are corrupted and bought by the Israel lobby, just like she is, and just like the candidates that she's pushing are. And who are paid off and bought off to excuse genocide at the expense of Democrats having a credibility with the voter base as they try to create some sort of distance between them and Donald Trump. She's actively undermining that because she's corrupted by AIPAC and by the Israel lobby, and she wants more of those kind of people in Congress, more fascist enablers. Because if you're a liberal Zionist at this point, you are a fascist enabler through and through. And that's what Gillibrand's doing over the next, I don't know, 5 or so years.
How do you have the person in charge of recruiting Senate candidates hold a position that is contrary to 77% of your voters?
Corruption.
Like, I mean, how much out of tune can you be? It's aside from the horror of the position she holds.
Yeah.
It is just rank incompetence.
It is incompetence. And there's three people running to Michigan: Stevens, Syed, McMorrow. We, of course, unanimously support Syed. McMorrow is probably the smart bet in terms of, like, you know, she doesn't have the liability Stevens does. Like, oh, I'm here in Israel. I love it. It's very misunderstood. I go there on vacation. She's still kind of McMorrow's squishy on it. But they went all in for Stevens because that's more important than even winning is.
She can't even talk.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's crazy.
It's like they are actively trying to sabotage themselves.
Remember the HB1? 2018, they were going to have this big bill, the Democrats.
Oh, yeah, they did. They rolled it out, except for they stepped all over their messaging because they were spending all their time trying to argue that Ilhan Omar had somehow said something anti-Semitic when she was basically repeating something that Thomas Friedman had said.
But he's not a Muslim person. And this is where, like, this obsession with Mamdani needing to atone for a phrase he never said, even though he's going on TV and distancing himself from it, which, like, do what you need to do. I don't think it's, like, the end of the world, but, and I see he's in a tough position with the globalize the Intifada thing.
But we're here to defend you if you don't want
to. But sure, yeah. I mean, I think that the Intifada, the first Intifada was peaceful, and then the second Intifada was provoked by Israel important with the storming concept. Of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, like, whatever. Like, the fact that that keeps getting repeated is just racism. It's just racism. Gillibrand is a racist towards Muslim people. And the fact that she keeps saying it, and people in the audience there, at wherever she's talking, oh, my feelings. I'm so scared about Zohran Mamdani. As if we have to validate this person's fear as anything different than Republicans who are afraid of Latinos coming over the border, yep. who are afraid of black people in their backyard. Just because they vote Democrat doesn't mean they aren't just as racist towards Muslim people as other groups are. And it's just, like, incredible to me. And it's just so wrong. It's so wrong. And the way that they keep repeating this, it is inciting a violent environment for this candidate in their own city. So
Lauren Hobart says, why is all lobbying for Israel blamed on AIPAC when Kufi has far deeper pockets? Well, I don't know that all lobbying is blamed on AIPAC, but within the context of the Democratic Party, you're not seeing Democratic candidates taking a bunch of money from Kufi.
Yeah.
They're taking it from AIPAC. And so, you know, relative to where we have interest in the most likely, party that could be responsive to this. It's not Kufi that's interfering, although, you know, maybe if AIPAC didn't exist, it would. But it's not Kufi, it's AIPAC.
Kufi's on the Republican side. And I get heated about this, but I just want to say, to wrap it up, like, how can you make the case about democracy when you don't listen to 77% of your voter base? How can you make that case to the public? You undercut your
part.
You undercut your credibility because you're anti-democratic,
you
even with the people that vote for you.
You make it cynically because you're actually just blatantly corrupt.
It's falling apart. I mean, it is falling apart, and they are white knuckled hanging on to this, and it is falling apart in front of their eyes. But in the meantime, what they're going to do is they're going to take all of us down with them.
Yeah.
Because she's out there promoting candidates who are out of step with the Democratic Party. You know, as we get distance, it becomes clearer and clearer that Harris's campaign was severely handicapped by her refusal to break from Biden on Israel. And I still believe that her administration would have been better than Biden's, and certainly better than Trump's. But as a political matter, their failure was massive.
Yep.
They knew the polling that Democrats were, that we've just shown you, that Democrats were, because they had access to polling that wasn't in March of 2025. They had access to polling in, you know, over the past 10 years, really, where support for Israel was dropping. They knew it was a problem. That's why they told their canvassers, we are no longer banking any data on the question of Israel and Palestine. They deliberately stopped taking that information when canvassers were delivering it up the food chain because they didn't want to know, because they didn't want to have to deal with the fact that they were running a campaign where they were fundamentally undermining themselves. It was total incompetence. And she, Gillibrand is part of it. Schumer is part of it. There's more, but they're the ones now who we're all hoping will in some way slow Donald Trump and the Republican Party's role. And they are playing right into it.
Exactly.
God, a good empanada. Did you see Zohran Mamdani's recent appearance on MSNBC with Al Sharpton when Mamdani gave in to pressure and condemned Palestinian resistance?
I was referring to, and that was the Intifada stuff. I mean, again, we understand why he's doing it, but if he didn't do it, we would defend
You're right to not. Yep. I mean, the way that that is just used as a placeholder for, like, he thinks we should do 9/11s. We had such an infantile conversation about this.
Guitarist Scar. I got a ticket to Charlie Kirk and Michael Knowles at the University of Minnesota. What should I ask him about if I have the opportunity? Not sure if they control the topics.
They do control very, very closely who gets asked questions. But something about Israel.
California resistance. Sam, let's never forget Gillibrand led the charge to get rid of Al Franken. How have the circumstances of Franken resigning aged now? I mean, we talked about this a little bit, actually, when we had Franken on the in the live show. I guess this was now 2 or 3 years ago. But, geez. But if you read Jane Mayer's article in The New Yorker about this, you see Gillibrand's role was, and frankly, Schumer's was also pretty bad. I mean, Franken made the decision, I think, largely because of the Roy Moore race. And I don't know if that would have helped or hurt. But Gillibrand clearly went in and knew that Franken was going to resign and then came out and sort of like piled on so she could make it look like she had done something. And then, of course, you know, the...
But then she doesn't disavow Andrew Cuomo.
Like, exactly.
I mean, that's what's just like that says everything you need to know about her.
Cynical.
You know, I like it's not personal or whatever. I'd interned for her before. And like you just kind of like, God, these Democrats stand for nothing. You know, they stand for absolutely nothing. And she made that abundantly
clear.
When
she was in the 19th.
Yeah.
19th district, 19th or 20th. I can't remember what it was. Those that district has changed so much. She was against immigrants getting driver's license.
Jesus.
She was very pro-gun. Now, that district at that time was also – that was in line with that district. But it's amazing that she can justify to herself, I had to do that when I was in that district. And when I went statewide, I moderated on those positions. Yet she will be out there promoting a position that 77% of Democrats are against.
Yeah. And I mean, she threw Franken under the bus because she was positioning herself as the Me Too candidate in the 2020 race, where 100%. She thought she could be president, which is hilarious. And look how quickly she abandons that now that she knows she has no shot. In favor of the like
easiest thing in politics, just say you're pro-Israel and get your campaign paid for.
Why do we get this Danny DeVito thing?
Oh, sure.
I put that on there. I just like
it's from 2019.
Oh, really? Oh, someone shared it.
Lion King's been dead for years, dude.
Yeah, that's what I thought when what? I thought.
I didn't know that.
Do you know what Larry King is?
Yeah, I thought he was just going to live
Dave
forever.
Dave Rubens, you remember? Yeah, well, he lives forever in that clip with when he got on the phone in
he
front of Dave Rubens.
To talk about the Dodgers, right?
And his kid's nephew's baseball game or something like that.
God, that was such an incredible... Do you think that disrespect was on purpose? Or just
He actually
age?
Likes Dave Rubin. It was not on purpose. They have a personal... They had, a personal relationship.
That's very odd.
Oh, we have a Tim Pool clip. Oh. Oh, what ridiculousness is he saying now?
He's debating a guy I've seen on...
Is this the Alex Jones guy?
I'm not sure who this is. This is...
Isn't that guy the Alex Jones guy?
Joel Webben, I'm not sure.
Oh, I don't know
Tomlinson, but he's debating a guy named Pisco Liddy. Who I've seen on Twitch before. I'll have a citation here in a second. But here are them talking about...
Show is this?
This is Culture War.
This is Tim Pool's show.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Conversation about Mahmoud Khalil.
Let me just stress something real quick. What Pisco does is he tries to trap you into an absolute position that you will deny 800,000
times. Hold on one second. Didn't he accuse me of doing that too? He accuses everybody.
Yeah. This reminded me a lot
of trying to force him to take a position on stuff instead of pretending like he's sort of plays both sides of the fence.
Yeah, he's just a weather vane or windsock.
Tries to trap you into an absolute position that you will deny 800,000 times like I've done throughout the entirety of the show.
Tell.
I can tell for the last 2 hours.
Wait, hang on a second. Right. You deny that you supported Mahmoud Khalil's deportation. You supported that deportation.
Clip this, guys. This is a really, really great one. He said, I support, in general, people being
Pause
deported over Israel.
Second. Wait a second. Didn't Tim Pool criticize me for saying clip this?
Prop clipping.
Now Tim thinks he's the prop clipper now.
Oh, interesting.
The prop clipped has become the prop clipper.
I see. I mean, use your tactics, their enemy's tactics on them.
I'll say, I don't think Tim makes a good point here.
You supported that deportation.
Clip this, guys. This is a really, really great one. He said, I support, in general, people being deported over Israel. Then, when challenged, he did the Martin Bailey back to a single individual with certain contexts.
Well, that's why he's being deported, isn't he? And the same thing with Meza Ozturk.
Didn't he call to destroy Western civilization?
My point is made.
His point was made. You support people being deported because of their views on Israel. Oh, what are you talking about? You supported Khalil's deportation. Well, that's just one example of exactly what you're talking about.
The most high-profile, basically, political prisoner for his political
this is
speech
where,
on Palestine.
This is where Tim Pool would, if he actually had a genuine position against it, would say, I did support that, but I didn't support this mm-hmm. example of what you're talking about because the Khalil deportation was specifically different on these terms. Now, Tim Pool won't say that because he doesn't believe that. He doesn't know of any other circumstances. Yeah. But he needs to maintain this notion of like, yes, I am sort of against this, but I can't be too explicit about it. So let's Martin Bailey.
Yeah. And also Mahmoud Khalil didn't say he's trying to end Western civilization.
That's something
he said. He's actually picked as a mediator between the activists and the administration because he is fairly measured.
And because Jewish students said explicitly he's not anti-Semitic and we like dealing with him.
Yeah. So they're just making stuff up to justify it.
Okay.
Because they do support it.
Meza Ozturk.
Didn't he call to destroy Western civilization?
My point is made.
Hang on a second. He's being deported because he was critical of Israel, isn't
he? You ask a question about a specific criminal context, but then try to claim...
Criminal context? What is he being charged with criminally?
Well, let's see. You see, this is the game he's playing.
What's the game?
He's
listening to me.
He's listening to what I'm saying, and he's trying to...
I know this listening game.
I know this make me define my terms.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
He's being deported because he was critical of Israel, isn't he?
You ask a question about a specific criminal context, but then try to
criminal context. What is he being charged with criminally?
Well, let's see. You see, this is the game he's playing. You'll say something like, here's a guy who stabbed the baby. She go to jail. And he was black. And you're like, yes. So he was like, well, Tim said black people should go to jail. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Wait, no. You supported someone who's...
One guy, one time.
Because he was critical of Israel. That's why you did support that. I mean, I had a conversation
because
support.
Of that or because he did other things that were objectively
He's
immoral.
Lying.
No, I'm not lying. What's the lie?
Did he do other things that were objectively immoral? Like, list one.
That guy thinks women shouldn't be allowed to work.
Oh, all right. Well, that was it. Okay.
One woman, one time.
I'm sorry. I don't want to be too indulgent, but I do have to back up to where Tim Pool repeats, one man, one time.
Hang on a second. He's being deported because he was critical of Israel, isn't
he? You ask a question about a specific criminal context, but then try to claim...
Criminal context? What is he being charged with criminally?
Well, let's see. You see, this is the game he's playing.
What's the game?
He'll say you'll say something like, here's a guy who stabbed the baby. She go to jail. And he was black. And you're like, yes. So he was like, well, Tim said black people should go to jail. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
Wait, no. You supported someone...
Pause it for a second. No. You could do the one guy one time in a second, but... The analogy is not, here's a guy who stabbed a baby, and he's black, and Tim Pool wants black people to go to jail. The analogy
is, Martin Bailey horse
here's
shit.
A guy who stabbed a baby, incidentally. Tim is now equating criticizing Israel with stabbing a baby. But let's let that slide for a moment. What Tim is doing is saying, here's a guy who stabbed a baby, he should go to jail. And there's another guy who stabbed a baby, and I'm not going to talk about that.
No.
Here's a guy.
Well, no, it's more.
You're saying Tim is being criticized for suggesting that someone who stabs a baby should go to jail. Mm-hmm. Now, in this case, Tim is the one who has made that the equivalent of criticizing Israel. But his analogy is also fake. It's amazing how hard he's running from this.
Because it's
who is this guy that he's debating? Is this somebody he has regularly on the show and it's really?
Oh, I've seen this guy on Twitter. He's
Pisco.
Good.
No, yeah. I've seen him on the
taking a pool to school.
He's a good analyst on stuff. I've seen him on the Straighterade Twitch channel. I believe he has his own Twitch now, which might even be live. Yeah, this is Pisco.
But stabbing a baby is not free speech. Okay, so like I just want to tease it out just for a little bit longer. So it would be as if a black guy stabbed a baby in a different country.
One guy, one time.
Right. And then, like, which I guess would be the Hamas attack. And then he would be saying that all black people who discuss the stabbing of the baby or the systemic reasons behind the stabbing of the baby.
You're trying
to I'm trying to say how stupid it is.
It's so stupid, but you can't even make it like that analogy because he's just either A, equating criticizing Israel to stabbing a baby, and then B, also switching the entire analogy. His analogy is wrong. Go ahead.
You see, this is the game he's playing.
What's the game?
He'll say you'll say something like, here's a guy who stabbed a baby. She go to jail, and he was black. And you're like, yes. He was like, well, Tim said black people should go to jail. It's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
No. You supported someone who's
one guy, one time. One guy, one time.
Because he was critical of Israel. That's why you did support that. I mean, I had the conversation.
Because of that, or because he did other things that were objectively immoral?
He's lying.
No, I'm not lying. What's the lie? What are you in favor of his deportation then for?
I'm not.
You said you were when we had this conversation.
He hates Americans shouldn't be in the country.
No, I said that the State Department has unilateral authority under the law to deport whoever they want.
You think it's wrong for them to try to deport Mahmoud Khalil?
Does your brain work, brother?
Well, can you answer that?
Do you understand the distinction between someone speaking and deported and the State Department having the authority to do so under color of law?
So do you agree with them doing that?
I believe that Marco Rubio has the authority under the law as passed by the American people.
This is the exact same thing he always does. This is what he did with capital punishment too, right? He did the exact same thing. What do you, like, is there literally somebody behind the scenes going like, If you say he shouldn't have been deported, we are pulling money out of your bank account. He is so desperate not to say this.
It's interesting.
He has really got this formula down because he does the same thing with capital punishment. When I question him about it, I was like, they could have committed capital punishment, even though he said should. It's now it's just semantics.
I just want to point out just when you say is there someone behind the scenes, I'm not saying that this is the case, but we do know that Tim was seeking some funding mechanisms that ended up being, you know, Russian money going through some sort of fake man.
Yeah, right. He got it through
Lauren Southern.
It was reported a few months ago that Benjamin Netanyahu and Tim Pool met along with Dave Rubin. We also know that Benjamin Netanyahu's son, who is of fighting age, but he's in a Miami high-rise, is a big fan of Tim Pool and often tweets about it. I just wanted to throw that out there because there's a lot of foreign
money. One guy, one time.
That was Lauren Chen, not Lauren Southern. Apologies for giving them.
I believe that Marco Rubio has the authority under the law as passed by the American people.
Authority in that context.
Pause it for 1 second. I will also say that while the State Department may have the right to revoke visas, if it is found that they're doing it specifically because of free speech, the Supreme Court has also found that that is what curbs their ability to do it. You can in fact have a power that the government has, but if it is exercised based upon principles that are anti-constitutional or against the Constitution, then they don't have the ability to do that. That is, free speech is specifically where the government does not punish people because of their speech. And so even if they have the ability to do something, if they do it because it is spurred by speech that the government doesn't like, then it becomes unconstitutional.
Sometimes maybe.
It's perfectly Mahmoud consistent. Khalil's case, do you support his deportation?
I think that's a great case. It's perfectly consistent
I would
with
say
his overall position.
C-. I don't care.
It's perfectly consistent. Whether you care or not, do you think that his position should happen?
I believe that the State Department has the authority to do so. I don't care whether they do or don't.
He's smashing the controller right now.
No, you're saying that you don't care as in you're indifferent. You're indifferent whether they do it or not.
Indeed. So let me say this. When I said in the last debate, Marco Rubio, under the law, has the authority to do so, and I don't really care, he then came here and said, Tim thinks people should be deported for speech about Israel. You see the distinction
there? You're fine with it. You're fine with them doing that, aren't you?
fine with and don't care are different things.
Oh my God. Oh my God.
He takes a sip for his buddy. Applause break.
Exactly. Actually, go back. Let's get that sip because he actually thinks he's cooking here, which is very funny.
You're fine with it. You're fine with him doing that, aren't you?
Fine with and don't care are different things.
So if.
Then why do you do this, bro?
What are you talking about?
No, it's
why?
Not.
What is the point?
He does care.
Yeah.
This is the thing.
I don't care at all.
He's always talking about free speech and whatnot. He does care. It's just that for whatever reason, people come up with their own conclusions as to why he is so terrified to take a position on it. Like, he takes positions on all these other things. It's not that he doesn't care. It's that he's afraid to say it. Because if he says he's okay with Khalil being deported because of what he said about Israel, he knows he's going to lose part of his audience.
Yep.
But if he says he's against Khalil for being deported because of his thoughts on Israel, he could probably lose something else. Maybe it's funding. Maybe it's some other part of his audience. Who knows? Who knows?
I like him using "I don't care" there, just because I am thinking a little bit about.
I wonder where he heard that.
Where he got that. It's odd that he's using both the clipping part and the "I don't care."
It's like Sam on some level, like Tim Pool has, in many respects, studied me to try and learn.
It feels that way.
A technique, but it's like when your student just maybe has like. Dyslexia or something like that, and he just can't quite get it.
That's an analogy. It's not accusing Tim of having dyslexia or being ableist.
I don't think Tim has dyslexia. No, dyslexia is a challenge. The words get switched up. It's tough to read, and it's left untreated, it's very, very difficult to learn things. I'm not saying that Tim has dyslexia.
He just might need needs a little extra kind of push for him to understand some of these concepts.
No, I just think there are some things that he can't understand, and maybe there are some things where it's just too expensive for him to understand.
Exactly.
The dude has an entire empty skateboard indoor park.
Can you imagine the electricity bill on that kind of thing?
Well, the electricity bill, and I imagine he also thought like there'd be more people using it and it wouldn't just be him every day.
She was offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys.
He does have folks that come and watch him.
Milton Apathy says he's your son. You failed as a parent, Sam. In many respects I did.
I understand.
In many respects, I did fail, Tim. So I am sorry for that. I did my best.
He copied something you did.
He said, "You're getting emotional, Sam."
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He's like a mimic.
He's like a bad mimic.
Seems like it bothers him a little. Yeah. I mean, some of those more viral clips, I guess.
But. Well, and someone told me that he's upset because whenever he searches himself on YouTube, whenever he searches Tim Pool, because we say Tim Pool so much, apparently he gets videos that we did about Tim Pool.
We should stop saying Tim Pool so much because Tim Pool might be upset, and that's not very nice to Tim Pool.
Unfair to Tim Pool.
And that goes so far beyond the pale. I just can't even.
The Southern debutante.
I just can't
I
even.
Just can't.
Yeah.
Oh boy. All right. We're out of time. We didn't get the phone calls today. Dave Rubin's lab coat. Tim's such a small man who gets smaller with each perceived slight against him. A fascinating study in loserdom. Let's see. Sunset Lakes PBD. Sunset Lakes PBD, MR's most valued sponsor.
For you. Give it to
it
Vinny.
Won't hurt your productivity.
Give Vinny some of the relaxing bites.
What is the name
bites?
Of that thing? Manect me or Manect me?
Manect.
Manect.
What?
Give Vinny some gummies.
You know Manect?
No.
It's like Discord, but it
Or Cameo.
It's like Cameo, but you could ask them questions directly.
Okay.
And they'll answer your questions. And it's called Manect because you're connecting with me, I think.
Or men.
No, yeah. I think it's the I think the people on Her Talk also have can Manect.
Oh.
And I was wrong. It's not for me.
Yeah.
Did you put that up, or are people going to have to guess who we're laughing
they can
at?
Guess.
People are going to have to guess. It's probably not a huge mystery.
People can make a bet on Pauly Market what we were.
Manect.
Whoopsies.
71 consultations.
Well.
5-star rating.
It's an extension of his business, which is business consulting. Right. So he probably has multi-tiers, and Manect is sort of the retail version of it.
Do you have that ka-ching sound drop?
$25 for a text answer, $100 for a video answer, $15 per minute video call.
$15 per minute?
Yeah. Some good reviews here.
So $900
an
hour?
Reading?
What is that? I'm trying to figure out. Like, what is it? Is it 900 bucks an hour?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. What is $15 per minute?
I can't do math in my head. So, like,
what's 150?
If you put a gun in my
five?
Head, I would just get murdered.
Ask yeah. me to do
that. All right, I can't.
It's 250, I think. No, I can't.
Whatever.
Do that.
Yeah. Dang. Forget it. Well, you know what we could do?
Manect it.
Manect.
It's $900 an hour.
There you go.
Oh my god, that's what like high like lawyers build. Bill.
Hey, 5-star.
Thank you for calling me.
Look, here's this.
I
want to
call the who's the guy with the glasses, the smart one?
Oh, Tom. Oh,
yeah,
Tom the policy.
Tom, you gotta call Tom the policy guy. Find out how much it is.
Explain the tariffs to me, Tom.
Reflections of film. Yesterday, a viewer asked about TMR taking dark money from undisclosed sources. You say the show has two sources of funding: ad revenue and membership donations. Yes, TMR is transparent about who is paying them to run ads, but your membership donations are not transparent at all. You don't disclose how much of your income comes from members, the names of members, the total number of members, or the amount that each member donates. You claim this is transparent simply because you've disclosed the fact that you're taking these anonymous donations. But Chorus disclosed the fact that their creators receive monthly stipends from anonymous charitable donors on their website, and they're not transparent in your view.
Listen, oh, are you joking? I thought that was a joke.
If yeah. the... in my opinion, if you are being paid by the Chorus people, this is an institution. This is not, this is not members where I will say this too, to give you more transparency. None of our members, and I'm just going to do the high end because I think it's actually lower than this. I doubt we even have a $250 a month person. But A, we don't have anybody who supports the show, members, above $250 per month. Although I'm welcome, I don't even know what the
Step
other
up,
tiers
folks.
Are. But also, they come with no stipulations.
Yes.
There contract. Is no contract in which I have signed with them. So I have no idea why they are members, what they expect of me. I have no requirement other than to do the show. And in fact, I don't even have that requirement. If I wanted to, tomorrow, we're not going to do a show. And that $250 a month subscriber says, what are you doing?
I'm canceling.
I will fire them.
Right.
And that is so transparent. But even with all that said, if a person getting that kind of money said, and I don't know exactly what, how often you'd have to say it. I mean, whatever. But I am supported by Chorus, which is supported by big money donors. I think at least in that instance, the audience would have the opportunity to know that this dynamic is happening.
Yes.
Whether they, it's up to the audience person to determine whether that influences them. These terms of the contract... Again, I don't think that they necessarily that Chorus necessarily held people to these contracts, or like, but it was an opportunity for Chorus to end the relationship if things got, you know, people moved out of certain lanes.
Then you get hooked on the money, and it's very, and then you start, in theory, this is how this stuff works, to tailor your coverage to keep that funding mechanism alive. Even if they don't enforce the terms of the contract, which says that Chorus, which, again, this is different than the Chorus website, which advertises some of the people they've collaborated with. What Taylor and Wired's reporting, which has still not been corrected at all, revealed was this paid incubator program that is funded by dark money, and Chorus is basically the middleman, which from the, whatever, 1630 or whatever it's called, fund. That is what she revealed. And she revealed that that funding had requirements about not saying that they were funded by them publicly. So we are public about our advertisers. That we are public about how we make our money on YouTube, and we are public about having members where you can IM the show and then get access to commercial-free elements of this.
This is so wildly off base.
Okay.
While you might not have signed a contract agreeing to certain restrictions on your content.
Hell yeah.
So wait a second. It sounds like you are accepting that there were restrictions on the content of these people, but be that, that's your assessment. There does exist a social contract between you and your audience. Here's my social contract with you. You're fired if you like there is no social contract. I'm sorry, Chorus isn't getting paid to produce content, but you are. If your content changes dramatically, you stray too far from the expectations of viewers, you risk losing their money.
Yeah, like we support genocide.
If you have followed this show for any length of time, you know that even back when we were making virtually no money, that if someone wrote me and said, email, IM, whatever it was, that your coverage of this or what you said about that, I'm going to quit. They, to the extent that I could know who they were, they sent me an email, I would have their email address, they would be summarily fired from the show.
You've done this before on air, canceled memberships.
So the idea that like we that we feel some type of pressure from the audience, I'm sure that's true on some level. But there are plenty of examples of, and here's the fact is that like, we have no way of knowing, I don't know, you know, I don't even know how many members we have, but it's definitely at least a couple of thousand, maybe more, 3,000 or somewhere in there, maybe more. We have no way of knowing what those members expect. And if you think that we tailor our show to views on YouTube, you should look at like our shows are. Like, I mean, honestly, I know what our audience wants. I know what the biggest audience wants out there. And that is, you know, Trump, 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 Trump. And if you look at what we do in the show, it is like if you set out to do a drier show, in terms of like, you would be hard pressed to do that. So the notion of audience capture is absurd.
It's also not unique to our circumstance. In fact, every single show would have this issue. Other shows, though, are getting subsidization from other places, including contracts that say you can't disclose it. That's
and also
the problem.
Understand, like, why do you think we have an audience that is, if your assumption is that we have an audience that's anti-genocide, why do you think we have that audience? Because if you look at like the two biggest players in that Chorus media story, they are a multiple size, the times the size of us. And I have been critical of Israel since literally, I don't know, the day or the month that I got involved in this business in 2004. The audience is here not because I think that they want us to be critical of Israel. The audience is here because we are critical of Israel, and they
came
have come
to us
this.
Because also this was suppressed on YouTube. We know, and we know that the anti-genocide content a lot of it across social media platforms, especially like Instagram. Remember right before the election, conveniently, they started limiting inflammatory political content and then brought it back after Trump got elected, interestingly enough. Like that, there's active suppression of this topic.
This is the classic way to end a majority report, which is 10 minutes responding to a pathological pedant flattening any meaningful distinction into imbecility.
I love the idea that a financial contract is the same as the social contract with the audience.
That's on its face a stupid thing to say, and we responded to it.
I literally thought it was a parody post until Sam kept going.
Kylik, I did cancel my TYT membership over there, continuing to have a pro-genocide host after it became apparent he was beatenly pro-genocide?
Patently. That Ben Glebe thing. I mean, but that's kind of stuff is good for views, right? Like debates and stuff like that. That's how Jubilee's making it their whole business model. Drier conversations with Ilan Pappe about genocide or, you know, whatever, academics, Rashid Khalidi, that doesn't get into the algorithm in the same way. But if you have a guy that supports genocide on payroll and you go back and forth and scream at each other, that is good for business.
Trilliflops, Sam, if you don't buy some new shirts, then I'm going to pull my funding of the show.
This is a new shirt. This is a nice one. I like this one. We're kind of matching again today.
Shirt is not new.
Oh, dang. All right.
The shirt is like 8 years old.
Well, there you go. That's new for you, actually.
It's prime right now.
That's a change.
It's exactly where I want it.
Sam shirt years.
Okay. Six IMs. I'm sorry. Oh, my God. Woods from Chicago. Hey, I'm our crew. Glad to hear we have a Packers fan in the studio. Go Pack, go.
Hell yeah. Space, 20 and 0.
Space Lennon, French teacher here. It's Gamine.
Sorry. I took French, too.
Mike from Bavaria. You all talk shit about Jerry Connolly, but I think it was nice from the Democrats to jump when Make-A-Wish couldn't get John Cena. The MR audience wants Sam's to do ASMR reading of the 2024 Social Security report, but he keeps refusing. Bingo dango. Seems to me these days the federal government is doing more to hurt people and nearly nothing to help, so why shouldn't it get shut down? I mean, look, shutdown of government will be difficult. There's no doubt about it. But sometimes, like, a rolling shutdown's worse. It really is a choice between two bad situations. One that could help things get better quicker. Janet, you think he's referencing being an informant against Epstein in a card to Epstein?
In terms of using a weird term like enigma, this is something we have in common.
I think he's the enigma is that they both could be like
skating free as giant predators
or have weird proclivities that people don't understand, or there's mysterious stuff. I mean, who knows? Yeah. But it is a weird thing to say to somebody.
It's an enigmatic thing to say.
No, I'm sorry. It's a quote. I'm not a conspiracy theorist about this. This is a quote from Lolita, I think. Or actually, I'll verify it later. I don't have time to look it up. But I'm pretty sure that it is like a whatever. But maybe not. Maybe not.
Look it up first.
Okay. All right.
Blaze Chadwell. David should write a book called Day In and Day Out. Okay. All right. Three more. Third line left winger, Manect. Is that a multi-purpose honey product? I don't get it, but it's funny. Nam Dinet. Oh, geez. Despite Brian's protestations, I have confidence in him, unlike Pete Buttigieg. And the final IM of the day. Jeremo says... Yeah, Sammy back. I get it. When are we going to talk about baseball in the fun half?
We can talk about it right now.
For Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm going to get there. truth.